it's Dr. Fred Bell. Coming to you live tonight, Saturday Night Live, the Fred Health Science and Energy Show. Dr. Fred Bell here, and live on with our Saturday Night Health Science and Energy Show. I want to thank my 13 listeners out there for sending in 13 comments and feedbacks. And, of course, I did have a 14th listener who sent me a negative feedback, but I not only does the listener not listening anymore, but the feedback doesn't exist. So take your chances when Dr. Fred Bell gets feedback. Secondly, by the way, I want to say that that music was from the album, Fellowship album, and that was in the Cannes Film Festival in 1989. I wrote that. And it made some of that stuff in there came out in some European movies. And that song, Freely, I feel, was pretty interesting because I played that because the Mystery X girl that was on earlier had seen a vision where she saw two suns. And if you notice how the word started on that, Freely, I feel, as we move across the surface of Era at a leisurely 500 kilometers per second, per minute. Two suns grace the sky, one very bright, one very dim. And that's how it is on Era. There are two suns, Alcyone being the brighter one, Taygeta being the brighter one, and Alcyone being the dimmer one. So it's pretty interesting. So anyway, off that subject now, and back to my 13 listeners. You listeners have got to stop something. I know what you're doing out there. I know three of you for a fact went out and got new email addresses and pretended to be three more new people. Don't do that, because I'm wise. I got eyes and ears from the walls. You know, that's Dr. Fred. I like to have eyes and ears and things. So don't try to fool me with more listeners and by duplicating yourselves. Anyway, tonight I want to talk about a bunch of things, but one of the first things I want to talk about is channeling. It seems to be a very interesting subject these days. And Don will be in the background here. He's going to be kind of tagging along on this show for a little while.
Just chirping away.
Yeah, just chirping away. And we'll do the questions and answers, if anybody has any, when we get into some of the paradigm things that I like to talk about later. But channeling to me is interesting. I'll give you a little background on how I got into it. How did I get into it? I don't even remember when I got into it, whether it would be my continuity of consciousness, remembering life to life, past life to past life. That sort of helps, but I think the channeling aspect really started my life off when I was about 30 years old. I had left NASA. I had been to several thousand different companies as a consultant, and I was pretty much fed up with the whole governmental scene. I didn't know the first thing about metaphysics in those days, and so I took some time off and studied with some Himalayan masters, and studied some Kundalini yoga, and learned how to take the chi force and move it up and down my spine, which then in turn caused the cerebral spinal fluid to start moving freely up and down my spine, which in any case of anyone that does that, a biochemical change takes place, and your spinal cord is like a giant antenna. It's a huge antenna. And it works on three basic octaves or three basic frequencies. They're called mutual inductive fields, with which I think Girlfriend X was very, very explicit on. I was very impressed with her physics background. And these three fields will fire off their synapses over three different periods of your life. The first period of your life is when you take exit from your last one and you come into this life. And when you come into this life, you are laying there in your crib. Like, if you're like I was, you're trying to figure out how to get your hands and your feet to work. I was understanding the English language, although I'd been in Germany just a few minutes before. And I was saying to myself, damn, it's going to take a while here to get all this stuff working. But I understood. And babies usually understand, somehow. They understand, like I know I did, and I'm sure most of them do, especially the modern ones, like she was saying, coming in after 95, which we'll talk about why that's happening in a minute. And so basically, your body is not really ready for channeling. It's not ready for a whole lot of stuff. Your consciousness always is. It's always ready, but body's not. So you go through a period of life, a period of about 10 years, the first 10 years, the first decade of existence here in this world, and you learn to read, write, you know, the language of where you're incarnated in, that village or city or countryside. You learn to physical exercise. You develop your talents. If in the past life you were a great talent in some form of exercise, you could be a star athlete now, or you could be a piano player, be like Beethoven reincarnated. All that stuff starts to show up before your, you know, 10th birthday. Second decade of life is from 10 to 20, and that's usually what I call the era, a decade of contradiction. Because most children, regardless of where they're coming from, have got a pretty clear, undistorted vision of what the truth is. And, of course, they're living in a planet of denial and lies, and everybody, because of their dysfunctional families, lives in shame, which breeds addiction, and addiction is quite the poison of the day. There's the psychiatric and drug business is very high in prescription drugs. The illicit drug business is high in smoking pot, doing mushrooms. The alcohol business is greater than ever. Everybody's out feeding their addictions because nobody wants to stand up and account for themselves, be here now. So that's what the 10-year-old, 20-year-old sees, including starting at home, usually with the parents. Now, that's not all cases. Sometimes there are very functional homes, maybe one out of 1,000. Who knows today? Wish it was better, but it's not. And so this is how it goes. Then when you get from 20 to 30, you've either survived or you've taken an attitude, become a criminal, and gone out, and it's okay, they don't do it, I'll just become a robber or something. So you've criminalized yourself, or you've addicted yourself, or maybe you've been smart enough to go to college and get a degree, or you've done some form of education. And I might say that older generations, when they talk about, I only had an eighth grade education, if you look at the quality or the tests of an eighth grade education 100 years ago, you'd have to pretty much have a college degree to answer the questions that were on those tests. I will post one of those tests up on my Dr. Bell section if you really want to see what people in eighth grade had to pass 100 years ago, because I have a copy of it. So then you get into your 30s now. Of course, the hormones are changing in the body. Hormones are changing in your body. You're starting, your energy is, your spiritual energy is starting to rise now. It starts to, at least mine did. I always speak from my own point of view. Somehow or other, people agree with me or something, but not always. Your spiritual energy starts to rise in your 30s, like Wild Don over there. He's really rising fast now. And if you haven't wrecked your life too bad, you're not coming, you're not rising your kundalini out of the ashes of destruction of your first part of your life, like some people do. And these are like rehab drug people that become therapists. And you see that, you know, gang members that were killing people, now they've become healers. And you see that aspect of our society. You move on through that, you develop, this is where the channeling starts usually, where it makes sense, because you're looking for another purpose, you're looking for your past, you're looking for your heritage. And it was real interesting, a girlfriend X went back east, because in the New England area, and I lived there a lot and I started out there, there's a tremendous thing called tradition that we don't have in Palo Alto or Menlo Park or Saratoga, California. You don't find tradition out here on the West Coast. You found cowboys. You know, that's what you got out here. A lot of cowboys, what I see anyway. Back there, it's traditional. You know, I went to an Ivy League school, and University of Michigan wasn't the best, but it was good. Ann Arbor, we had some tradition there. I lived in New York. We had it there. I lived in, you know, Massachusetts. We had tradition there. I liked it back there. So I can see why a person would go back there to kind of do some healing. But anyway, when you get into your 40s, now you are probably starting to focus a little bit more on your career and your longevity, and you're starting to realize that you're maybe not as bulletproof as you thought you were. And usually women are starting to go through the change of life, and men are starting to go through the change of life somewhere in there. Men usually go through around late 40s, and are a little bit more reckless, I find sometimes. Some of them become raging alcoholics, what they call Zeta drinkers, where they do it occasionally and completely get in all kinds of trouble, but not, they weren't alcoholics previous. There's all kinds of things that happen. Getting into your 50s, you're getting serious now. You're through the change of life, and you start to focus on your spiritual work. And that's, and then on up, it just gets more interesting. Now, here's where your disciplines are important. It's important to have a good health input, good food, air, water, all those kinds of things. Diet, exercise. Exercise is incredibly important. I force myself to do it. I never used to have to, but I do now. Exercise is no problem. It's just starting it. So this is how the life goes on the physical plane. Now we got another thing we got to look at, the second aspect of what's going on here. Okay? The Earth rotates around the central spiritual sun, okay, every 26,827.5 years it makes this rotation. Divide that by 4, and you have how many, you have the exact number of inches around the Great Pyramid in Giza, the Cheops Pyramid, okay? So, that has a very historical meaning. And as the Earth goes around the Pleiades, we have 2,250-year cycles that we call ages. In the last age that we came through was called the Piscean Age. In the Piscean Age, the masses were believers. They believed blindly in a God force. Hence, for the last 2,000-some-odd years, we created religion. If we didn't have a an agreement on that religion, we created holy wars. Holy wars seemed to solve the problem. The previous time before that, and the previous age to that, was a time when the holy books were written, like the Bhagavad Gita and some of the other things. Well, back about 12,000 years ago, an interesting thing happened, which sort of flavored the whole concept of the better side of the dark and light forces, and that was when a group from the Pleiades, called the Rishis, came here and landed in Tibet, near Mount Everest. And they unloaded their musical instruments, like sitars that are consciousness-raising. They unloaded their teachings into Tibet, and they began the incarnation of the 14 series of lamas, Dalai Lamas, that we have today. So the Rishis and the Pleiades, they also brought with them the Pleiadian language. The Pleiadian language is phonics of nature, based on the same thing as Sanskrit is. So we had a beginning of a thread, a thing going on. Simultaneously to that, from a previous time, we had an area up over the Gobi Desert, which a place called, in the second Ether, called Shambhala existed. Shambhala existed about one revolution back and two revolutions and three revolutions back around the Pleiades in a higher vibratory state, in a very close state to what the consciousness of a Pleiadian that would come here and visit today. Some people might look up in the air and see a spaceship, and others might look up in the air and see nothing, because their consciousness is not working properly yet. So, going back to the kundalini energy, the spine, as the cerebral spinal fluid starts to rise up the spine and reaches the base of the brain, the synapses start to fire higher and harder. And this should take place, and this girlfriend X brought up as a thing, we should teach this in our schools, about this yoga and these forms of higher arts. In some places in Tibet, like in the world of schools that Dalai Lama went, they teach these things. They should be taught here. But they can't be taught here, because if they teach these things here, what happens is governments, which is the dark force, the Freemasons, the Masons, you know, the Club of Rome, all of the dark force, doesn't want those things taught here. We're still burning books in the libraries of Alexandria in our daily life. You know, corporate America still pushes kids through college and the ones that are high school, and the ones that can read, and the ones that can't, they push aside so the other ones get through. In my time, I went to school, I was pushed through by the military, because the military wanted me, because I had a consciousness that they knew about, and that's why I began working for the government at a very early age. But still, I was able to observe all the things that I'm talking about now, because I had those powers of observation. Well, then as we get up into the higher part of age, our immune system changes. If you remember when you were in school, you probably got every damn disease that came along, because your immune system really hadn't learned how to balance out from one virus to the other and produce a self-vaccinating system, which you should be able to produce today. It's pretty hard with the generic mutation of these government-oriented viruses that Len Horowitz and I talk about, mostly him talking about it. Makes it harder. But that's, once again, the dark force trying to limit your abilities to move forward in time and space and consciousness as a free will human being. So at this point, there's a mineral that needs to come in your body. And you got to remember this about your body. Your body is 5% mineral. That 5% mineral controls the other 95% of metabolism in your body and your consciousness. If your metabolism doesn't work, your consciousness might be, you might be God, but you can't speak through your body, because there's going to be a broken link. The wires aren't going to work. So that one of the reasons I got into supplementation was to fix those kinds of things. You know, chromium becomes the second frequency. Remember we said the first frequency of the minerals is the base minerals, iron, when you're a kid. Second becomes chromium. Chromium is a reflective mineral. At some point in your life, you start reflecting on yourself. When you become, this is when you move from being an animal is conscious of something, and a human being is conscious of consciousness. Now, a lot of small children are not quite conscious of their consciousness yet. They're only conscious. Usually the ones who are spoiled is a good example. But eventually they become conscious of consciousness. And this is when they're starting to fire a higher frequency in the brain and the synaptic rate. And their body is now looking for things like chromium acolinate and some of the more exotic minerals in the body as reflective minerals. Remember in the 60s and 50s, because our whole generation found that simultaneously put chrome bumpers on everything. Everything had huge taillights. It was a way of expressing we need chrome. Except we did it externally. We need to do it internally. And finally, when you get older, somewhere in your 30s, you should start taking trace minerals, vanadium, chromium, all these kinds of things. Trace minerals now feed the fuel in the electrolytes in your brain, allowing you your brain synapses to fire off and create an aura field that is so super sensitive that can now tune into the time, the clock, and the frequency of be here now in these ages. That's one of the reasons why I got into trace minerals. Just looking at trace minerals as a history, the American Indians were into it long before we were. The big killer at the turn of the century, the big killer was arthritis. Everybody died at 50 years old around here. The European populace coming to America died at 50. Well, there was a guy up in Utah about 1928 who was dying of arthritis. The Indians liked him. He was a retired geologist. So they tossed him into a spring up there, and his arthritis went away, and he started to get healed. Usually when you get arthritis, you get pneumonia. The actual exiting process is pneumonia. So he was dumped in the stream, and he got well. So he said, why am I getting well? So he went up the stream and found that the stream came from a red clay. And this red clay was a source of trace minerals that he never had in his body, eating deer and meat and things they ate in those days, and you know, some grass and corn and stuff in the fields. Didn't have the trace minerals because they had been long ago leached out by the sun in the behavior of this world. So trace minerals are hard to get. So this was a 2,000-year-old source of trace minerals in a red clay, and he started taking them, and he, you know, became very healthy. And he started a company, which I deal with today. And from there, we take this red clay, we ionize it, and we create a trace mineral that's second to none, called pyrrolo, we put into people's bodies. Second thing you need to know is at the University of Michigan, when I was very young, we noticed, I was working with Dr. Katz in the Randolph Radiation Lab, and what we found out was that people in Hiroshima and Nagasaki that were very close to the bomb, those two bombs that went off, some of them up really close, didn't have any exposure. I mean, they had a major exposure to radiation, but they had no long-term effects, no detriment, no damage. And there were people far away that had major damage, genetic damage. Well, why can people be in front of the radiation and get nothing, and somebody far away get everything? We found that they had large amounts of electrolytes, those that weren't hurt in their body. Electrolytes were in their bodies, in their brain. And we found out that they had large amounts of Potai, ginseng, and Coca-Cola. And I sent Don some Potai the other day, and he tried it. He kind of liked it, didn't you, Don? That Potai, remember that shabu tea that I sent you?
Oh, yeah, I remember it. It was fabulous stuff, actually.
And you had a kind of a transcendental feeling, didn't you?
Yeah, well, when you take...
That's how everybody should be now.
Yeah.
Okay, now. Okay, so that's the background. What I just said now, background stated, case in point, foundation to build next conversation into insanity. Okay, here we go. So we're going around the Pleiades now. We're supposed to be going in the direction that I show you that we're going, but we're not. And one of the things that I did is that all the products that serves the pyramids and blah, 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 all the things I made are to allow your body to not see the stress of our society and go in the direction that I pointed out. If we had a proper society and a proper environment, you wouldn't need anything I do. I wouldn't even be needed here. But unfortunately, I am. So as we rotate around the Pleiades, we go from the Piscean Age, where we had these holy wars, and I believe was the foundation of the human soul at that point, mass incarnations. Of course, there's people behind the scenes that are much smarter than that, but, and you know, if you put, you know, intelligentsia into the equation. Then we come into the next vibratory frequency, and now we come into what's called the Aquarian Age. The Aquarian Age is where the knowers are. These are the 144,000 souls that were liberated in a past 27,000-year cycle that are now coming back to pay their dues because they have found, they've been in paradise, and they found paradise gets very boring. So you might as well get down and get dirty again, because the vacillation between spirit and matter involves love and hate and work and play. So they realize all that thing, and the only way you can evolve spiritually is to help somebody else. That's the only way you're ever going to do it. But I always say, physician, heal thyself. And so, therefore, we need to heal ourselves first. And how do we know that we've healed ourselves? Well, a lot of people go through 12-step programs. Some people, you know, study under masters. There's a million ways to get yourself healed, but you'll know internally when you can handle stress, when you don't react to it, when you're not caught up in desire, and your desire has changed to aspiration. I asked Sannyasi one time. I asked the pastor, I said, you know what, Sannyasi, you guys are out hitting new planets all the time. How do you tell when you reach an evolved race whether they're animal-like or whether they're spiritual-like? And she said, if they're moving in the direction of desire, searching of the manifest, they're on the downhill, and they're probably going to destroy themselves. But she said, if they are searching for the unmanifest, and they're in their aspiration mode, then we know these are good people, and these are the people we're going to work with. We do make choices, and that's how we do it. So I thought that was really interesting. Aspiration, desire, search of the manifest or the unmanifest. Good answer. She's good with those answers. So anyway, we're moving now into the Aquarian Age. These new souls are coming in. The vibratory frequency of our bodies is coming up. Some people call that the photon belt. It's a belt of light, but in my new book, Inside Track, I'm talking about the physics of that. Don's even got one of the papers. I think it's got some mistakes in it. We threw rough paper up on explaining. I like to explain it from the atomic level. And let me just give you a lay explanation now before we move on. We're going to get to channeling, believe me. That's the topic. We're working up to it. Your body is made up of oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, and carbon. Oxygen is the animation factor, prana. Okay, breathing exercises, asanas, kundalini, all the different forms of yoga, martial arts. Way of delivering oxygen, singing, getting the solar plexus, which has gray matter, loaded with oxygen to expel it through the chakras of throat to make a sound happen. You're resonating with your own diaphragm. Then we have nitrogen. Nitrogen is the factor that allows the body to make proteins. It's a form of substance. You can make protein and substance, or you can make dynamite, depending on how you want to use it. Then we have the hydrogen atom, which is consciousness, and the carbon atom, which is the assembly point. The assembly point meaning that there's a diagram to a blueprint to make oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen work in concert. Who is the conductor? The hydrogen atom. And so if you were to look at the Great Pyramid with the precession of the equinox laid out at the base and start a spiral up the pyramid towards the top, you can start to understand the Egyptian mysteries. As they rotate around the Pleiades, the consciousness comes from the base of the pyramid, moving to the apex of the peak. And that spiral tightens. When that spiral tightens, it's squeezing consciousness up the top. It's also spiraling as we rotate around the Pleiades to make you happen. If your life is in a circle, then you've got a problem. You've got to keep it going in a spiral, always moving more into the now. You can only move forward into the now. So this is kind of how that part works. Later on, now we have the prophecies of Revelation. Well, we have another experience that starts to happen at this point in the Pleiades as we go into this photon belt. Before I go into that experience, I want to stop and look at the hydrogen atom for a minute so you can understand it. I want to map it for you. The hydrogen atom has a core. It's 1,645 times more dense than the little electron dancing around it. The electron dancing around a hydrogen atom at the speed of light. Now, here's another thing. Light has no speed. Light is consciousness intertwined. It appears to have a speed in a medium. In our medium of Earth, in the medium of a cell, it has a measured speed of 186,273 miles per second, according to Einstein. But that doesn't mean anything when you move into the astral frequencies, which post up what we call megons and the source of color, and then everything is instantaneous. But that's only a probability, because we're being here now in this form. So we look at the hydrogen atom, and we see this electron doing a dance of Shiva. Now, depending on your personality and your character, through your entire existence, you carry 5 seed atoms. They go through every incarnation, but they always determine your traits. They always are your point of reference for the Akashic records. The 5 seed atoms are everything that you'll build on for your entire existence before you go into Pralaya. and you exist no more, as except with the one, which was called part of the impolute, which is laid back in the Tibetan lore as Dwarpa, Trita Yoga, Trita, Kali, the Yuga period, Kali, Trita, et cetera, et cetera. There's four of them. And then you have the day of Brahm, which is so many billions of years. There's all kinds of calendars that lay this out. But right now, I don't want to get too far out, back to the hydrogen atom. The Ayurvedic people who cultivated herbs for a long time knew about these long-term cycles, and they began to make an observation. And that was with the hydrogen atom in plants versus humans. In a human being, in the hydrogen atom, not only does the hydrogen atom dance around the body, depending on your personality, as it dances around the nucleus, it produces a orbital pattern, a P orbital, a W orbital, an S orbital. And physicists know this well. The same thing goes with all matter, all living things, whether it be an herb or a human being, there's orbital patterns. At the moment, during this revolution, now once again, we're taught that this electron moves around the hydrogen atom. During this revolutionary period around this hydrogen atom, the electron actually stops, because if it's in motion, it can't act as a doorway to bring the higher forces. If it's bringing in consciousness, it has to stop and allow consciousness to hit the nucleus. And right here is where a lot of people, in my last show, I have a meditation for consciousness. I'm not going to go into it now, but I'm just going to say consciousness, as I see it, is this. Mind is a slayer of the real. Energy follows thought. So if I get up in the morning, I know that I have the willpower to switch from my astral sleep to getting up and starting the day. And so that to me is the color red. It's something in my head chakra, it's the pituitary pineal gland relationship. I get out of bed, and that's the will. I willed myself into this day. Some days I'd rather not, but I do. We all do, whether we want to or not, sooner or later. Some of us do it early, and some of us do it late. That's a level of consciousness, the will. You get out of bed and you see a child, you got some kids and they're coming over to see, and one of them falls down. Well, you feel bad. That's the solar plexus feeling. That's the consciousness of compassion. That's a level of consciousness. There are hormones. There are seven different levels of consciousness. You have seven different endocrine glands in the body, of which there are seven sets of hormones stored there, so that you can now have these hormones reach the brain. And so when you observe and feel this child falling down, you feel this level of consciousness called compassion. Then you have your loved one. You love the child. That's love. That's another level of, love can be, hate can be, there's opposites. But love is another feeling. It's not will getting up in the morning. It's not watching somebody have a misfortune. It's another feeling. And these are levels of consciousness supported by a hormonal system, supported by a vibratory capillary network that releases these hormones in concert in sexual feelings. Testosterone, estrogen are the hormones, sexual feelings. You might get up in the morning with will and sexual feelings. So you got two levels going simultaneously. That's what consciousness is about. That comes through the hydrogen atom. Now, how does that happen, people say? What do you mean it comes through? A feeling. Where are we going here with this? Well, where we're going is, it's energy. But energy has patterns, and science is now realizing this, because we're now moving around this precession of the equinox. Science is waking up, and science is now realizing that the experiment and the experimenter are usually one and the same. That means that in a laboratory, you can't duplicate somebody else's experiments if it's theoretical and you don't believe in it in the first place, because you'd be blind to the result. The result might be the one that was supposed to be there, but you're not going to see it, because you're not allowed to see it, because you haven't allowed yourself to see it. All characteristics of the hydrogen atom. So, when we look at the hydrogen atom, when we look at the core of the hydrogen atom, we find there are six quarks in there. Quarks. Up quarks, down quarks. Strangeness, charm, they have names. These are particles that exist on a higher plane. In this case, quarks exist on the second ether. In the second ether, inside that is the astral plane. In there we find megons. Inside that we find other particles. Hadrons, leptons. Leptons determine our ability to process gravity. When Jesus walked on water, on one level of the hydrogen atom, he had control of the leptonic rate, the transfer rate in his hydrogen atom, which he transferred to consciousness, which allowed him to go walking on water. This is all scientific stuff, but guess what? The Tibetans call this holy science, based on Pleiadian stuff, And if you study Jesus, he went to the mystery schools and he learned this stuff. This is not new coming from me. I learned this stuff from the Tibetans. I learned this stuff from the Pleiadians, and it works. And it works and explains everything if you go slowly. Now, if you look at herbs, the Ayurvedic people looked at herbs a long time ago, and what they saw was characteristics of herbs and flaws in the human personality. For example, if somebody is feeling schizophrenia, they're feeling closed in. Obviously, they have an oxygen to the brain problem. That's definitely an Ayurvedic problem or a regular health problem. It's claustrophobic feeling. And they found if you give him slippery elm bark, wow, you know, that helps. If we were to look at the orbital pattern of the hydrogen atom with a person of claustrophobia, and then we were to look at the opposite of that aura, we would see, first of all, if we're looking at the aura of the hydrogen atom in a person, we're going to see these little glitches that are causing this phenomenon in the personality of claustrophobia. It's just going to show up on the hydrogen. It's going to be mapped out. We're going to map it out. We go and look at a slippery elm bark, and we see it has, you know, like saponins. It has different things in the sap and the characteristics that in its hydrogen structure are very similar to the problems in the hydrogen atom of the human body, but slightly augmented. So what happens is you take this hydrogen-structured herb and apply it to this personality deficit, and guess what? You don't have claustrophobia anymore. So that's where Ayurvedic medicine came from, by identifying human traits, identifying how humans, through karmic interaction, destroy themselves and don't behave, create these blockages, and there's a whole garden of herbs out there that will, boom, fix all the problems. And so Ayurvedic medicine, just giving you some background, the nuclear receptor that I developed does the same thing, and that's why the FDA is real interested in it in a positive way, because we can demonstrate these things and what it does. Now, that's enough background. Now I want to talk about more leading into channeling, now that you have the background. Okay, the Egyptians, you know, going back quite a ways, from the Assyrian kings who built the Great Pyramids in Atlantean times, transferred their consciousness over to the Earth's field, and the Earth's energies, left quite a bit behind. If you study the Book of the Dead, you're going to see something that came into modern Egypt about 5,000 years before Christ's time is when you started to see some of this knowledge starting to manifest in scrolls and books and things that come out today in our society as ancient books. To me, they're not so old, but for a lot of people, they're pretty damn old. One of the things that they did is they embalmed people. They didn't embalm people to make mummies to resurrect in those bodies. They were embalming people, and this was done. The process was using tannic acid, draining the blood and putting back into the body a tannic acid solution, which is a preservative, and then taking that tannic acid and putting them inside the pyramid, one of the great pyramids or some of the pyramids. Any pyramid would work if it had enough mass to it. And that would then preserve the life force in there to the point when you still look today with Carillion photography at some mummies, they still have evidence of life force from the body. But that's just from the body. It's not from the spirit that was in there. And what they were trying to get across, and the only people, by the way, they never found in the pyramids any bodies or anything. They were never left there. They were put away in tombs. But what they found out was that in this process, only the royal families were embalmed. The other families weren't. Later on, a lot of priests like Miracina. Miracinus was a priest, and he had to build his little pyramid in the compound where the Giza pyramid is. Priests started getting in on the action, but priests were not considered holy people. And what the whole point of that was is to for people to recognize that there's a very great importance to the physical plane versus the higher spiritual planes, especially the astral and mental planes. That's a very important aspect. You better cherish life here, because otherwise the gods can't play with you through your consciousness, through channeling or whatever, because there's nothing to do. So then they fizzle up and go away. So what the Egyptians were trying to say, and that's why there's such a great emphasis today in all the families, you know, like, you know, we talk about my friend Wesley Snipes. You know, Don and I talk about him. He definitely... the way he behaves, and I've known him for a long time, he behaves like someone that existed in Egypt about 3,000 years before Christ. And his father was known as Ptah, And he just does things that were that Ptah's son, if you know your Egyptology, Imhotep was his son. And Imhotep was the one who brought to the Africans a martial arts called Chi Gemini. He was the first doctor there. He was the he worked under a king who built the collapsing pyramid in Egypt. It's a whole interesting lineage that took place. And I noticed that working with Wesley Snipes, I noticed that he has mastered a martial arts that's foreign to anything, and he's better than Bruce Lee. He has an incredible knowledge of medicine. He's a holistic doctor. As a matter of fact, if you knew his phone number, he answers Dr. Snipes because he has a PhD in medicine. The man is very smart, and he's taking his acting right now, and he's bringing his acting out to make this planet a better place. As a matter of fact, he might be working with Don, and he might be on the BBS circuit one of these days. I'm just giving you one example. So here's a person that understands, but he's recognized by the world as someone who makes a difference. And so we recognize now, at least I did, I recognized a long time ago that the Egyptians were trying to tell us that it's very important to have a grounding of the people on earth for the gods to play with. Now, the gods, that's the next step. Ares. I love God Ares. He is a trip. His daughters, you know, I know that you probably know that Mystery Girl tonight is a daughter of Ares. She speaks clearly. She's going through the growth process and dragging a lot of people and bringing a lot of people and healing a lot of people simultaneous through that. That's what the goddesses do. And the channeling is their input to make sure they've got to have their sanity, and they get it, because it's, and you better watch out. They'll burn you up in their truth, because their truth is real. It's real. That channeling process is getting in touch with another part of development, which is a huge astral plane. And of course, there's always a war. Gods love to play with humans. You know, there's a big war going on all the time between those gods. And usually the god Pan becomes very prevalent. God Pan becomes very prevalent. And when you recognize in channeling when God Pan is coming through, that takes away, unfortunately, the mystery of the good guys and the bad guys, because Pan will play with you. Some people get out there and they take their first acid trips, and they come out and they look in the mirror and they see a monster. Well, the monster is just their ignorance. That's called the dweller on the threshold. They haven't reached the level of the gods, but they have reached the vibratory frequency that will bring them to the level of the gods when they see that monster. Their own ego scares them to death. So that begins the forming of the formation of channeling, and channeling goes on. I'll give you an example of one of my involvements with channeling. In 1979, I was at the Portland, Oregon Health Show, traveling around with the National Health Federation, a group of people. Len Horowitz was part of it. Previous to him, my generation, and we had people like John Christopher, the herb person. We had Pablo Arroyo. We had Nathan Pritikin, who I'm sure you've heard of the Pritikin diet. So all these people were on the National Health Federation circuit. And we were going around enlightening people. And the National Health Federation started back in 1948 when two people, Thomas Colston and Fred Hart, developed a Pleiadian device called the Deep Polar Ray, and we're healing with a 44 megahertz pulsed radio frequency wave. We're healing arthritis. Of course, you know who stepped in, the FDA, and shut them down. Of course, it wasn't called the FDA in those days, but they shut them down. Out of protest, they started the National Health Federation. So we're doing a convention at one of our many cities. We all lectured and all these different things, and Paradigm was launched behind that. We're doing a lecture, and this girl is very attractive, blue-eyed, little blonde housewife girl from Portland is standing there, and she's looking at our booth. And back in those days, we didn't have receptors and ionizers and all the stuff that we had. 1979. All we had was a pyridome, a radome, and a fire dome. Three pyramids that you wear on your head. And so she kept staring at those pyramids, and I knew she was enchanted with them. I knew she was too bashful to come forward. And so I went over to her and I said, "You know what, dear?" I said, "You know, you look to me like a soul that's in search of food. And I think that pyramid over there is going to feed your soul. You need those." And it was kind of cute because we used to sell all three of them for $39. You could get you can't even touch one of them for that now because gold prices were so much lower. But so she bought all three pyramids. She brought the pyridome, and she bought the fire dome, and she bought the ray dome, and she went home. And she, you know, I don't know what happened. I only get secondhand information, but she put them on her head and start wearing them. Well, she thought they were silly, and she was one of these, you know, girls that, you know, had the pretty fingernails and the blue eyes and the nice shoes and the nylons and very streamlined, smooth-looking woman, very, very attractive and very conscious of that she was attractive. And so I put her in as the high-powered, beautiful American housewife type. Well, she got home, and she started putting these pyramids on, and all hell broke loose. Her life changed, because immediately, I guess after 2 or 3 weeks of wearing one of them, I don't know which one it was, guess who appeared, Don? You know who came to her?
Who's that?
Ramtha.
Oh, yeah, I think you told me about this, actually.
Yeah, Jay-Z Knight.
Yeah.
He started off from my booth in the National Health Federation. We launched her, okay? She became a great channel with a great following. I don't know if you want the warrior leading you around. He was Ramtha's a warrior, but Jay-Z has a huge following. So we were able to launch a few channels here and there, including myself at one time. I did some amazing channeling. And because the gods, you know, that's the way you get in touch with the gods. Now, that's not the ultimate trip, and I think most channelers know that. Now, here's another thing that, whereas here's the dangerous side of it, and this is another thing that Girl X brought up tonight, which is very good. People die behind channeling, okay? This is I know this fact so well. Schoolyard shootings is a result of several different things. A, it's what we call a compression on the planes. What a compression on the planes means is that as we rotate around the Pleiades, say 200 years ago, we were losing our body. We were going out of body. Okay? Well, we go into a heaven world, or we go into a hell world, or wherever our religion dictated. And our religion, of course, is established by a group of us agreeing on the physical plane. As the Egyptians said, you know, this belief system is established. We agreed on maybe we'd have purgatory, or we'd have this. And we had this belief that has a lot of energy. Energy follows thought, so a lot of souls believe in this. When you go out of your body, you're powered now. You're tuned to the resonant frequency of that religion, and you're going for a ride on it. Out of your body until somebody gets pregnant and brings you back in that religion, hopefully. You know, and the same thing with the Dalai Lama. That all works that way. You know, occasionally some Dalai Lamas miss their target and they don't qualify like Tenzin Gyatso did, and they land in 1962 like Lama Rinpoche, who was one of the first American Lamas. He was there in 1962. He was an incarnate Lama. Nobody had to do with him. But anyway, what happens is these children... See, when you go out into the astral plane, normally you have up to 1,200 years of terrestrial years in what we call a ring pass knot, which is the astral plane auric frequency around the Earth. It's about, goes out, you know, just out past the moon. That's where the energy fields, where all this takes place. It actually has a boundary. It's an inner boundary, but you give it an exterior. It fizzles out, you know, as you get past that, and this is called ring pass knot. And so anyway... This area, this time of going out and spending 1,200 years started to fade out, you know, probably about 1,200 years ago. And that's what the Revelation and the Great White Throne Judgment Day in the Bible is talking about. You know, pretty soon you don't go out anywhere you stand accounted for. You don't have any. You die and you're out of your body and you're stuck. And you're now the witness to all of this. It kind of speeds up your evolution in a way, whether you might not like it or not. So what happens is if you start to look at the fact that people disincarnating are not experiencing long out of bodies in heaven worlds anymore, they're reincarnating rather fast, you start to get a perspective on what the inner behavior of children is at a young age, realizing that they are souls. Like me, for example, in 1943, I was killed in 1942 and I was back in 43. I had approximately an hour, which is about a year here. So not very much time went by. So now what happens is, let's say you take a serial killer, and this is where I'm against capital punishment, have been for a long time. Capital punishment is not the way to rehabilitate a soul. It's the quick way to bring them back for more mischief. If you were to take and you take a serial killer rapist and you put them on the electric chair, they're going to come back with tendencies in the child form to continue on. They don't have time to sit back in the 1,200 year period on the couch and realize what their errors were of their ways. There's no healing process here. They're right back full bore again, and these tendencies start to develop earlier and early. You know, because now as we move around the Pleiades, we're experiencing a higher resonant frequency of the cell. The light force is coming in quicker, is what they call a photon belt, which is nothing more. Remember, light is seven levels of consciousness, so your consciousness is raising at a faster rate. And so what happens is you're going to gain your past life tendencies instead of 40 years old or 50 years old, like I was explaining earlier in the first part, and that's why I did that. You're going to get those past life tendencies now at 10 years old. Case in point, Mitchell in Arkansas, Jonesboro shooting. When little Mitchell down there shot 13 people, I think he killed 9 of them. What was it? And he was 13 years old. I maybe shot 9. I forget the numbers. I was involved in that case because I went out and I worked for school systems on this. But the bottom line is, he up in Wisconsin, he came from Wisconsin, moved to Jonesboro. In Wisconsin, he was brought up on charges at 10 years old with rape charges for another young girl at 10 years old. And so by the time he'd gotten down to, he was 13 in Jonesboro, he had rape and homicide tendencies. So tell me that wasn't a past life thing coming through rather quickly and out of control. And that's why it's so important to teach this channeling thing, because if somebody would have been taught channeling in school, they would understand that this child's tendencies is not because the parents, instead of the parents going, oh my God, what's wrong with this kid? What happened here? We didn't know him. The kid is now being educated to work these tendencies out in a school system, and this can be fixed. Another example, World War II. World War II, we had a bunch of back in the camps back there in the camps that were funded by I.W. Farben, which of course is Merck, which is, you know, Roche Laboratories that makes Tamiflu, you know, those, that kind of money. Back in those days, what would happen is the Jewish children were being brought into the camps, in the concentration camps. And what the SS liked to do, the SS was the people that the Suslaffe was called in German, they liked to bring in these children, and they would put them in the back of their jeeps, and they would parade them around before they would kill them, the kids. And they'd love to take 10, 12, 13, 14-year-old kids. They would give them a mohawk haircut, and then they would paint their hair purple with spray paint, you know, that they thought, or dye. They thought that was really cool. So they made these kids look like mohawks and Indians, and they drove them around all over the prison camps, making a mockery of them, and then they, you know, proceeded to slaughter them. So what do you have? Now you got the same kid. He died. He was killed at an early age. He was humiliated, you know. People have tremendous feelings at that age, way more than now. At our age, they get deadened sometimes. And so what happens is they come back, and we had a whole era of skinheads and kids running around doing the mohawk, painting their hair, doing the piercing. Why? Where did that come from? Well, that's where part of it comes from. Next case in point, Hitler Youth Movement. Hitler Youth Movement. Okay, here's the scenario. End of World War II, okay? General Montgomery is in charge of the theater, and General Eisenhower. Eisenhower's smart. He lets Montgomery have the leading end. They're all coming to Berlin, where Hitler's killed himself. They have a right, and Joseph Goebbels and their families. They're all dead. And here come the Russians, the most pissed off people, angriest people coming to get the Germans or the Russians, because they were in concert, they were aligned, they were allies, and Joseph Stalin has a bad attitude towards the Nazi and the Third Reich. He has a real bad attitude. So what happens? Who is going to defend the last of the Third Reich? The Hitler Youth Movement. How old are these kids? 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old kids. And they're out there being slaughtered by the Russians as they come in. They are being slaughtered and killed and run over by tanks and tortured beyond your wildest dreams. And now looking at this incarnation cycle, they don't have much time to heal. Here they come back again. They're going to have some attitude. If you start to understand our history, it won't repeat itself. You start understanding the powers of incarnation, then you begin to understand why kids behave that way, and you can do something about it. But nobody really wants to. Nobody really wants to understand all of that. Moving on with the procession of the equinox, the phenomenon of taking prisoners and dropping them off by the British in Australia was not a new process that was done by the British. The Pleiadians have long called this world, because they were guilty of this, of dropping people off that were not in concert with civilization. And so the Earth itself became a prison planet for quite some time. Pleiadians evolved out of war about 26,000 years ago, and they came here to make amends for what they had done the previous 25,000 years. And so they have a karmic debt to fulfill to keep war out of their own home worlds. And so therefore, as it says in the Bible, in Job, verse 35:2, it says, you should be bound down by the belts of Orion, or you should be set free by the sweet influence of the Pleiades. And so all of these things have motion. These things all have a very historical fact when you start realizing history. And unfortunately, people don't really understand history. So channeling becomes a very important thing in people's lives. The bottom line is realize what it is and don't let it get a hold of you, because it's just your instrument being a playground for the gods. That's all it is. It's an educational process. Once you start it, you can't turn it off. You have to evolve beyond it. You have to go through it. It's just something that we go through. I worked with a lot of great channels. I was known as one myself. I remember working with Kevin Ryerson. He was the channel for Shirley MacLaine, that channeling conference we used to do in Europe. We did some huge conferences over there. When I played the concert, I explained to Don, we played a concert and we had three Pleiadian ships come, and I was right in the middle of a concert over there in the channeling conference in Marnell in the Bavarian Alps in Billy Meyer's backyard. We had the Air Force come in there. We had the town cordoned off. We had cops everywhere. It does stir things up when you get in the right environment. Well, channeling and all of this stuff is very important. So now we're moving around the Pleiades. We're moving on into the precession of the equinox. We're coming into the Aquarian Age. These kids are starting to be smarter and smarter. They learn. I had the equivalent of a master's degree when I was 18. Kids today get them at 7. I mean, probably 8 or 9 now. There's much smarter kids than me out there, which is great. That's what we're here for. I want to kick back and coast here pretty soon, but unfortunately I'm not able to do that yet. So this is what it's all about. And as we move forward into this, the planes are also compressing, because there's another thing that goes on here. The Earth is a non-sacred planet, but it's been considered, there's been so many visitations by so many races for such a long period of time, and as we are part of a precession of an equinox, it's a good place to more or less do some genetic work. It's a good place to experiment spiritually, and it's a good a place for the logos to work. We have these higher bodies. You know, we have these chakras that are our bodies, and inside we have endocrine glands. Then we can look at ourselves as being inside of a greater being, and those chakras are our planets. We call that a planetary or solar logos. We have a planetary logos. His name is Sanat Kumara, who physically resides in the second ether above the Gobi Desert. It was funny because when I was tracking for the government, Bin Laden was right underneath him. You know, when he went up for his healing, he was up in China, right over in the Gobi Desert. He stayed there for about 2 months for his healing. Another story, another day, but it's fun when you do remote viewing to see and know where these high points are. I remember I told Don about a Pleiadian city that exists up in Aspen, up on top of a mountain that you can only see under certain conditions when these veils come down, because there are things called veils. It's real interesting if you go back to King Arthur's time. I can really do a lot of subjects here. This is kind of fun. In the old days, during King Arthur's time, which were during the Holy Wars, you could cross this lake in England, and this lake was called Avalon. And if you crossed Avalon, now you got to remember, you got to look at the environment here for a second. We didn't have ELF, we didn't have HARP, we didn't have junk food, we didn't have all this crap that goes on in our environment. What we did have was people reading by candlelight and torch. What we did have was times when we had no telephones, no microwave. So we had times of relaxation. We had castles, we had lives, we had everything we got today, but without the distortion. So it made it very easy to fire off our synapses and our brains at a higher frequency and go penetrate these veils by actually raising our vibratory content to such a point that we could actually penetrate these veils. So what would happen is we had the Beltane fires, we had the witches, which were nothing more than enlightened masters, most of them female. We had a lot going on. We also had the priesthood. And it was easy to access either one. So when you crossed Avalon Lake, you could get in your little boat and you could go across the lake and you would end up in possibly Avalon, which is where the Morgan Le Fay and everybody was. Or you could end up in, not in a Beltane witch compound, but you could end up in where the priests lived, the Franciscan priests of the time lived. Same place, two different spaces and time. It was a little more magical then. That's the days of Stonehenge was around. So people don't realize we've lost that ability to transcend so easily without drugs and alcohol. We could transcend to that second ether so easy. It's all called the second ether. It's part of the physical body. It's part of the physical plane. When you look at physics, you know, you look at, you have a physical body, you know, and inside the physical body, you have, you know, protons and electrons and that. Then you have the next stage up, the physical body. You have the electrical body, which is the aura frequencies. Then you have the electrical precursing body, which is where I work most of the time, which directs the lower bodies. And then you get up into ionization in the ionic body. And then you go through the ionic body right on up into the second ether, which is a doorway to the astral plane. But you don't have to die to get there. You can stay there. I mean, you can go up there. Yogis do a thing called what are called siddhis. Siddhis take us into a super kundalini state where the cerebral spinal fluid comes up. No longer do you need to use oxygen like you normally do, so that yogi can go into a coffin and throw him in a swimming pool, and he can stay there 15 hours and come out and say, hey, it feels great. You can stop your heart, and you can melt ice with your body like some of the Tibetans do. And I actually got a chance to learn some of those things when I was younger. I was real ambitious. And it's not all that hard to do, but you got to have tremendous discipline. I remember that I'm a vegetarian now. I was a vegetarian then. I had to go fruit and nuts for a year, and then I had to fast for a long time and then be subjected to these stupid tests. So kind of a building of the ego, but it gives you a confidence about what's on the other side. When I took the American Indian ceremony, except they gave me strychnine, but it's the same thing as the rattlesnake ceremony, and became a medicine man in the Hickory Apache tribes, which I visit in Dulce, New Mexico a lot, which there they have a bunch of grays underground. It's an interesting story for another show. So anyway, that's a little bit on channeling and what it's all about. And as we move around, these planes are now compressing, meaning that normally we have the physical plane, the astral plane, the mental plane, legoic, etmic, and you know, all the way out, legoic being the highest. We have these seven planes that come from a higher space, and the channeling takes place between the lower planes. The higher planes, we start reaching up to the angels, and it's nice because the angels kind of supersede the games of the gods, which is when you get past that stupid manipulated place where Pan likes to run you know, over your life and gets these kids and creates killing. I mean, this is a vicious god. You get past that and you get higher up, then you can start to understand it. At the same time, we have the whole extraterrestrial evolution, which people have a tendency to confuse extraterrestrials sometimes with gods. They're not. They're not angels. The extraterrestrials are higher evolved. They're higher frequency, you know. We were high frequency here, but we kind of messed it up 12,000 years ago in Atlantis. 12,000 years ago in Atlantis, we had scalar wave warfare. And what we did is we brought down Atlantean, the black priests of Atlantis took over and released these energy fields, very much like the field now that the Tesla waves that the Russians are using. They took the 2 feet off the leading section of an SR-22 CIA spy plane. That's why we went to the Aura. We got that technology making a comeback here, which is very unfortunate. But what happened was 12,000 years ago in the destructive nature of Atlantis, which was halfway around the precession of the equinox, it was coming off the high side, coming into the low side. They unleashed some negative spiritual energies here, negative auric frequencies, kinks, whatever you want to call them, and they created three different Bermuda Triangle type places on the Earth. And of course, we know the story of the Bermuda Triangle here off the coast of Florida, and there's one over in China, and there's another one, 180 degrees, or I mean, 90, whatever the divide 360 by 3, and you end up with the amount of degrees between them. And these then become part of what we call the growth resistance aura frequencies of the body and the planet. And this creates an energy field that goes into our DNA, which then causes the DNA to despiral at a rapid rate. Methuselah, for example, lived a long time ago, lived 400 to 600 years. A lot of these people lived that long. Pleiadians lived 1,500 years. So when you start looking at how we behave and how we make our vibratory frequency change, we become more etheric, more second ether than physical, but still physical. Still, you could eat something. You start to have a longer lifespan. So that gives you a longer consciousness, a greater learning curve, and an average Pleiadian has the equivalent of 15 PhDs, and they graduate around 120 to 140 years old. and they move on into their studies. Then you go from the Pleiadians to the Lyrians. The Lyrians are the teachers of the Pleiadians. They live a little longer, a few thousand years. Then you go on up to the Andromedans. They live about 5,000 years. But they're not angels. When you get up to the Andromedan level, you're beyond karma. You know, you're in absolutes now. And people like Andromedans do things like divine intervention, which is another show. There's a lot of shows here in my words, but at least for me. But anyway, so these are the ways. So these are extraterrestrials. And I don't know what lies beyond the Andromedans. I've never had a contact with anything beyond that. I guess that some light beings are out there. But they're still not in the hierarchies of the angels because they still are a second ether-based being, whereas the angelic is completely devoid of any of the stuff that we're talking about. So there's two different things. And eventually, yes, they do merge, of course. And I guess if you get into the Arantia book and some of those studies, you get an idea. Most of those books are incorrect because they're interpreted by humans. But, you know, that gives you a little bit of a background. Now, where are we going? We're going as the planes are compressing, the mental is compressing into the astral is compressing down the physical. So what happens is, I remember, you know, people would take an acid trip in the 60s and observe something. Well, today, people that didn't do drugs are on an acid trip. The average behavior of a human being on this planet today is like they're on LSD because the pituitary gland is functioning in a different way. There's large amounts of tryptophan going all over their bodies and different amino acids out of control. So you see these strange behaviors. So you've got all that confusion going on, which creates a hell of a market for the drug companies. You've got a lot of spiritual action. You've got children not being educated in schools, you know, killing each other. There's a lot going on down here, but at least it gives you a background of where I come in to explain how to fix it. But first of all, it's good to understand, you know, before you figure out how to fix all this stuff, how to understand. And of course, you know, the children that are coming in are what we call space-born children. So they are free of the Earth's karma, and they will come down here, and they have sacrificed to come here. But what else is there to do? If you think about it, when you've done all this stuff, what else is there to do? You got to go back and help evolution. That's what you have to do, because that's the only way you're going to evolve, and we're all one anyway. We're only separated by a few moments of time. And then you can go into time. And that was another little, what I used to call one of my favorite cities. If you look at our bodies, once again, we're electromagnetic in nature. So we are basically in our bodies right now, listening to Dr. Fred Bell, insane rantings on BBS radio, supported by Insane Don over here. And I'm speaking for Don now. Yeah, we're doing this, but we're vibrating. And it appears, this is where what we call the illusion of Maya. It appears that I've been talking to you now for an hour and 14 minutes and 33 seconds, but actually I was on a little bit earlier, but somewhere in that period of time. But what it is, I haven't been talking to you. I've only been talking to you for 2 minutes. What happens is it appears in your time that length of time has gone by. My time has been only a few minutes because I'm on a different vibratory rate. Nah, just kidding. But anyway, you get the idea. Now, what happens in between those seconds? Your consciousness, you're carrying a certain amount of freight. Everyone listening out there is carrying a certain amount of freight, okay? Baggage. And this baggage is causing time to move. The baggage car is moving at a different rate for every one of you. Some of you, it's moving very fast right now, so time appears to be flying. And some of you, the baggage car is moving a little bit slow. Most of the time, for most people, it's probably moving kind of fast. And that's okay, but even if it's moving slow. But really, it's only an illusion of the baggage car moving. And if you think I'm kidding, study relativity. Relativity is very interesting. If I go and get in my little spaceship, and I let you hold a clock, and I said and you have a clock, we each have a clock at 8 o'clock, and I just got my spaceship and I made a couple fast passes around the Earth and got back here. My clock says 8:01, and yours says 8:15. Now why is that? Because I went into a higher vibratory frequency by moving out of the element of light. What is the element of light? Element of light is consciousness in this dimension, in this illusion. And this illusion is locked up by your mind. That's why we say the mind is the slayer of the real. All of you listeners out there and most people in this world are locked into WWBS, Bureau of Standards. We think right now the time is 8:49 p.m. That's our illusion. It's okay. But that's not what that in reality, there is no time. And when you understand there is no time, it allows you to go in between the moments. When you can go in between the moments, guess what? What happened at the well of Samaria? They were going to stone Jesus, weren't they, for being truthful. And he'd made a little comment about you, you know, when earlier, and not then, but earlier he'd made a little comment about some people stoning a woman for being a prostitute, saying, hey, he who has no sin, cast the first stone. Well, people remembered that. Well, they cornered him in Samaria in a well, and they were going to nail his butt, and he just disappeared. He just disappeared. He became invisible and went out, and they didn't see him, and he was gone. It's in the scriptures. Because he knows how to deal with Maya. Maya is a woman. Time is a lady. You'll learn all those things. And that's understanding the vibratory rate. When you drink alcohol and you black out, you're not blacking out. You're going into the alcohol vibe. You know, you're going into a space. Some of you might remember some of what happened of the blackout, and some of you might not remember any of it. But your body went on and did something, and you might wake up in jail the next morning wondering how you got there, because your body kept going, but you weren't there anymore. And that's why it's so important. It's so important now to go into a space and stay clear. Stay clear of things. Stay out of the way. People are hitting, things are hitting the walls. And that's common because where we're going into a light vibration. And the only way you're going to hook onto your immortality and start vibrating in a continuous manner where you can start becoming one with the light is stay clear of the dark. And so when you're understanding that, like what Sannyasi had said, when we go out, we find these planets and people living on them, and if they're in the search of the manifest, we leave them alone. If they're in search of the unmanifest, we become their teachers. You know, they don't call themselves teachers, helpers. They don't like the word teacher, but humans like it. So that gives you an idea. Understanding the vibratory frequencies, and that's what one of the things that Pyridyne has done. My company, we've developed Firestar orbs, we've developed the Andromedan projector. All of these things deal with that moment of time while you're vibrating. They all deal with quantum mechanics. They all deal with inner space. They deal with all of those kinds of things, and that's why we have this huge educational process. And we always say when you start using certain tools that we offer, be careful what you wish for, because it's going to happen whether you want it or not. And we always try to slow down people because things happen so fast when we start making these changes. They go so fast, it goes by them, and they don't even know what happened. It's like a bullet went by you. And pretty soon, your consciousness will start moving really fast, and you can start seeing into the illusion. You can start seeing in between these seconds. And that's when you start seeing his other beings, and you start seeing his influences. These subtle influences become obnoxious influences after a while. So the channeling part sort of gets you ready for that. But believe me, there's something way beyond that when you get through it. And you take this channeling and you understand it as a school of thought. You realize it's the playground of the gods. It's great for entertainment. It's great for self-development. It's a wrestling place to wake your spirit up and make you realize immortality. But then there come a day when you're going to graduate from it and you're going to just go on. You know, and that's what everybody has to do. And when you can realize there's a graduation process, then you don't get caught in the annals of what it is. You go, it's like, God, I had a great time when I was in college for the little time I got to go. I had a great time in the military, you know, messing with people's heads and studying. And then you'll have a great time with channeling. But I look back, would I go back to college? Well, yeah, I go back to college, but not knowing what I know now. And I'll maybe come around and do this again and go to college again. I enjoyed that. It was fun. But would I do it now? No. Why? Because I've done it already. And I'm somewhere else. I found another space. It worked better, but it was great being there, and I had a blast. When I was in the military, would I go back in the military? Not unless they pull me in. I don't think they want me, so I'm not going there. A little bit of other things I do with the government, I'll keep doing that because, I keep my own space, and they kind of respect me at this point. They used to not, but they do now. So, because they're starting to realize that, you know, the government is the ones in the fishbowl, not us. You know, we're the ones that, as long as we keep track of what's going on in this illusion, Maya, we're not in the fishbowl anymore. And so we realize what the development, the evolutionary arc of the curve is, then we're not caught in the evolutionary arc of the curve. So these are things that are very important, and we can go into in various shows. I'm sure maybe I'll get my 13 listeners revved up tonight. I'm sure I'll get some emails. I don't know if anybody wants to ask any questions at this phase of the show, but we could probably do those. What do you say, Don? You got any questions or anything? I didn't mean to go so fast.
Oh, heck no.
Building up. Got to get this out, you know.
Are you kidding? That's fabulous. I'm just enwrapped.
Are you?
Yeah. I really am.
It's just a little old guy fell out of his spaceship. Figure out what's going on down here with you crazy people. Of course, I'm part of you, you know. But what kind of questions do you have anyway? You must have one.
You know, I was reading. In a book, and it's a book by Susan Ward and her son channeling Matthew Ward.
Right.
And he was talking, what a wonderful book, by the way. I mean, I'd encourage people to buy that book, including your book.
Oh, yeah, the books are important. Oh, I read a lot of them in my time. I still do it.
But he was describing heaven as a place called Nirvana.
Nirvana, right.
And Nirvana supposedly encompasses all the energies from the dark to the light. So in other words, heaven just isn't heaven of the highest light. It's also hell with the least amount of light.
Right.
And it's separated by energy wavelengths.
Exactly.
And he says that it looks like an amoeba. It's not a sphere, really. It's more of an amoeboid shape.
Right.
And they have a protectorate shield around it that many of the extraterrestrials and various other highly evolved souls guard over it, because there is such a war, like you were saying, going on with these lords of light and lords of dark.
It's compressing down to the physical plane, and it's manifesting in the children as violence.
Yeah.
And gangs. You know, I mean, I didn't talk about gangs and all that. That's a whole other subject.
Yeah.
But I have physically worked in the school systems, Oregon, California, with these problems. So I know what it's like. I'm currently now working with doing volunteer work. I'm always involved. That's how you keep grounded, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he said that what was strange to me was he was saying Nirvana, because I never thought Nirvana had a distance from Earth. And that's kind of shocked me. So that was the question I was going to ask you. He says it's about as far away as the moon is from planet Earth. And
that's called a ring pass knot.
Okay, yeah, please explain, because
the ring pass knot, the first ring pass knot is around the human aura. And what that is to protect you. And what it does, you know, you can walk up to some, you know, you can walk up to some person and you try to explain to them how a pyramid works or how a receptor works or how channeling works or what vitamins do, and they aren't going to hear you. You know, they're going to sit there and they're going to chew their tobacco and just go on with what they're about, okay? You know
right.
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's a ring pass knot. And so that's your ability at that moment to express yourself at its furthest reaches of your imagination. And when you are at a point where you can express yourself at the furthest reaches of your imagination, that's your personal ring pass knot, okay? Now what happens is, you take that. Now, the only way to expand that, there's only one way to get that changed. Okay, you can eat all the great food you want and meditate and fast. You're not going to get past that until you reach another person. Okay, if you took a human being and put them in this world, they wouldn't have any personality. They would have nothing to bounce off of. So they would be just who they are, and they would evolve in their own way, and their imagination would be limited by A, their environment, B, what they put into their bodies, and C, if any possible intuitive spiritual recollection from any sort of past life. And that's pretty much where they're going to be. Now what happens is you bring another person along. You bring Eve in, okay? Or Eve is here and Adam comes. That's controversial. Pleiadians will tell you Eve came first. They have great egos. I love it. In humor. But anyway, so now you have a two aura field bumping each other, okay? And that's going to create discussion immediately. It's going to create differences. It's going to create unification. And if somebody gets pregnant, it's going to create a third person. But the two bumping each other, that's where karma is created. That's the beginning of karma. And that's energy follows thought. And karma, of course, is recorded in the Akashic record. It goes into the crystal kingdom. It goes in primarily the source of that record or that battery, that charger, is the silicon dioxide world, which is crystal. That's why everybody loves quartz. That's why we mine quartz. We have master crystals. People realize that. We use them. We utilize them. They're really great tools to work with. And that's what happens when you're working with karma. As a matter of fact, I asked Sannyasi to define a crystal one day, because I had one in my pocket. I showed it to her, and she says, that's the perfect synthesis of spirit and matter in zero time. And I thought, well, there's another one-liner. Just remember that a crystal is the perfect synthesis of spirit and matter in zero time. And yet it grows. It grows at a tenth of 1% of its weight every 10 years. It doesn't even have to be in the ground. Remember, the Atlanteans used to use the record keepers and the master crystals in the ground, but later on we pulled them out and we use them physically now everywhere.
So crystals actually keep growing? I mean, what happens
if they grow? They get bigger.
And if you've got one the size of a boulder, it'll actually get bigger?
Yep. Yeah,
wow.
It grows all the time. And it has energy. It will tune itself to you, and there's a whole world. I haven't talked about it on this show yet, but The Pleiadian, their background is they spend 60% of their life in nature. They believe that to be close to nature is to be close to God. And Sumyasi has said many times, with all your technology on Earth, you have yet to create one blade of grass in your laboratories, which is well said, you know. And so you learn from nature spirits. You know, you learn about the evolution of the group Oversoul. Group Oversoul, a long time ago on Earth, there was just something crawling out of the water and eating something, and then something came out of the water and ate that, and pretty soon it had feet, and it grew, and the plant, and that consciousness, that energy of that animal kind of ate a plant, and that plant had an awareness, and that awareness went into that animal, and it grew some more. And pretty soon we got into the humanoid state of it. Something came along and sped its evolution a little bit more, and it became aware of itself, and then became part of that place. So that's why when you go to some parts of the Earth, if you're from here, it feels very comfortable to be there because you evolved through there, and that's called the group. You know, you become an Oversoul, and then you finally individualize into a, you know, normal person. That's a long bit of evolution. But in the process, we have salamanders, which are fire spirits. We have water spirits. You know, earth, wind, fire, and air all have spirits, and these spirits work within our nature. And these are the lower, elemental kingdoms. We call them the elementals. Well, if you were in the Celtic religions or in the older religions, the power of this great, these great far-reaching astral channeling sessions that they did in the Beltane fires, they were first thing they do is acknowledge the earth spirits in the earth, and there was tremendous attention put to the earth. And so even with our Pleiadian systems that we do now, we use gemstones in our receptors as filters. In our irradiator systems, we use crystals for grounding them out. And like if you set one of our irradiator systems up, which is a scalar wave generator, which we use in one or four or seven of them, the first thing we tell you to do is we take two quartz crystals and set inside the bottom of it, and then we tell you go outside wherever you live, and grab two rocks from your neighborhood. You got to have your two local rocks to acknowledge these higher frequencies of this quartz. And we do that stuff. And then what we do is when we get people organized into systems technology, eventually what they'll do is most people are rock hounds. I bet you even collect some rocks and crystals and stuff. And so what we do is the Pleiadian way is we'll take your entire rock or crystal or mineral collection, everything you've accumulated in your entire life, and what we'll do is we'll hook it up into devices in an orchestrated manner, and all of a sudden it's like you got all these batteries and you just connected them to the instruments. We just hooked you up. And then you can start to realize all of these rocks, like in my living room, and I was in Rome and in Italy, I picked up stones from over there from some of the old temples and stuff. I went to, you know, Germany and got stuff from there, and in South America I get stuff from there, and Hawaii.
Yeah, people are going to start collecting rocks.
Everywhere I've been. I bring things and put them in here, and I organize them in the systems, and we start getting the vibratory buzz out of them. You know, they start creating, and you focus them, and you put them in energy, and that gives you a tremendous grounding.
It must. You remember my brother, ladies and gentlemen, my brother had the opportunity to meet Dr. Bell at his place, and my brother went into his home, and Dr. Bell has a lot of crystals and pyramids in his home, and my brother's head started to hurt at the very top of his head, and he said it was like a migraine headache intense, and it was only about a week and a half after he left your place that he opened up to the Kundalini experience and then moved into I call it ozone, but he was moving into areas I've never experienced before.
Right, and then realized what happened was his vibratory rate sped up, and he became aware of that in and out of consciousness that people are unaware of.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, it's not a point of just time going by. There's a lot going on there, and he got in touch with it, the in and out, the ebb and flow, I call it, spirit and matter. And he got on top of it, and it'll space you right out. It hit him.
Well, now you're going to have tons of people wanting to come over and just sit in Rock Garden.
Yeah, well, what we do is we have those seminars once a year.
Yeah.
And then two years ago, we had so many people, I had to do three shifts because we use the lasers, we use sound, Pleiadian sound, and the whole, first of all, the house, so those of you that don't understand what it is, this house, it was given to me by a Brahmin king, a Tibetan master, put me here. I didn't just walk in and buy this house. It was appointed by a Tibetan master. And so it became a temple. Sai Baba's been here, and a lot of very famous yogis have been here over the years and visited and put their blessings here. And we had a, it's up on top of a hill. It's 1,000 feet straight up over the ocean. You can see for 400 miles and 360 degrees around from the house, from the roof. There's an observation perch on the roof. And we had a tree blow over. We had a big eucalyptus tree. It blew over. And in the roots, we found gold. And we're on top of a volcano. And so the gold, and so we're pretty much immune to earthquakes. You know, we don't have much problem with them up here. Sometime we'll do a show on those. And
a feng shui master would love you.
Yeah, and anyway, we found these gold nuggets. So the University of California came over and assayed them at 3 ounces per ton. And so we're on top of a gold mine, so we have a very high vortex. And if you look at my book, Rays of Truth, you'll see that we're in a vortex here, one of the world vortexes. So when we use the extraterrestrial technology that we use, we actually create things happening in the future. And so, see, what we do here is we don't acknowledge anything. We love to hear all the predictions and all the things that go on, but we don't acknowledge any of that. We just be here now. And that gives us a kind of a pulse on what really goes on, and we've learned to just be here now, and that works really well. But what happens is, in that energy, people come in, and they often get sick. We've had people come in, and they don't make it up the stairs. They'll get up. It's a four-level house. They get up two levels, and they start to throw up, so they got to go downstairs because they can't handle the energy. It's very intense. But Don and I are always working late at night, and I can stay up. I usually stay up till 4 or 5 in the morning working on stuff that we work on.
Yeah. Don't Which is six much. My time.
And that's what we do, because we got a big job here to educate everybody, and we're going to have my 13 listeners are going to be so hot that they're going to be, every time they walk,
we have 14 today.
And Dr. Lynn, my buddy Lynn there, he was saying that he started this off. He's the one that started the evening. He was telling everybody, get to work. You know, don't listen to us. Go out and do your own thing. Do anything. Make a difference, and that's what you got to do now. I mean, it's important.
I do have one more question.
That's great, you know.
You know, there's this individual who often writes on our TNT Trusted News Trader, or TNT discussion board.
Yeah.
And he writes about, now it's the strangest thing, and I haven't asked anyone about this, and I don't know what to make of it. And he writes that microbes or bacteria or viruses are actually an intelligent, unified entity that connect with each other, and they're highly evolved, intelligent, destructive beings.
Right.
Like fungus, or, you know, you alluded to the fact of whether they're alien intelligences, but he says they are extremely and highly evolved intelligences that are here to wreak havoc and be destroyers.
Right.
Is that true?
This goes very back to the astral plane, and this is the god Pan's energy, you know, confusion and destruction. And this is when I did my shows on the Tamiflu, the Tamiflu, which is the inoculant for the avian flu, the HIN5, which doesn't exist for humans yet, it probably won't. And inside that particular Tamiflu is a thing called cyclohexane. Cyclohexane is it's a poison. It will slow down the Tamiflu, but it will lace your body with a poison. It will kill nerves. When you put this in your body, it will kill nerves in concert. So when you kill nerves in concert, okay, what happens is, and see, now the virus is in your system. The fake scare is in your system, right? So that's coming into your body. Now it's like that, the last announcement of Tamiflu, you know, I consider Donald Rumsfeld's company at this point, you know, Roche Laboratories. And, of course, Bush owns part of it too, I'm sure. When you look at what happened over there in Laos and Vietnam, it wasn't Tamiflu. It wasn't HIN5. It was just some virus that millions of people got, and 100 people got it, and 75 died, which is low stats, you know, considering what goes on. But anyway, when you got to understand two things. One, the red blood cell is four iron atoms. An iron atom is the same shape as the Great Pyramid, okay? It's got the same proportional distance of 26,827.5 around its circumference, times four. There's one iron atom, is one octahedral form, meaning it's a upside down, right side up pyramid, just like Lynn was talking about. And there's four of them in your body. There are two alpha, two beta chains. And when they go through, when they're propelled by your heart to go through your body, they leave an electromagnetic residue because they're made up of iron. They're, you know, it's the same thing as if you take a, a piece of metal like a screwdriver and put a magnet to it and rub it a little bit, it becomes magnetized. But what happens is, this blood goes through your system. Now, if you're aerobatic and you're breathing and you're doing that, you're creating a pathway, an inductive field, that's going to create a pretty healthy baseline to your consciousness, okay? And your ring pass knot will be out there a ways. And so what happens is, what they do with the cyclohexane is they kill the pathways where the blood is going in a grid pattern. Okay, they kill it in a particular grid pattern. That's what the rest of the drug will do, the other chemicals that are in the drug. And you can go on my website and blog and service. We've got all that stuff. Web, you can go prove that I'm wrong. And I always tell all of you listeners out there, there's always in my articles that we post up on blog and in my back pages on Dr. Fred Bell's background there, there's lots of links. We always leave the links up. Go prove me wrong. That's what I need. I need to be proven wrong. I dare you to. I need it. So anyway, it kills a certain pathway. Okay, let me explain how thought process works in the brain. Okay, learning process. Okay, you're a baby. See, Don, you're now 3 months old, right? And you're saying, "What's that? What's that?" And you're looking at a bell. You know, I like bells. So I pick a bell up and I ring it. Bing, bing, bing. And you say, "What's that?" And I say, "Bell." And I ring it. Pretty soon, your eyes have observed this bell, okay? Your ears have heard this bell. It rang. And you heard me, who you trust as your father, say bell. So all of that correlated in your brain, and you now know in permanent memory that thing is a bell. What happens physically in your brain is that a electromagnetic shock took place from the ear. Electromagnetic shock came in from your eyes. Optical frequencies broken down to a frequency of the blood, a lower frequency, audio broken down to a frequency of the blood. And that blood's moving through fat. All your brain is fat. So that repetitiveness of the stimulation of the three different, the sound, the visual, and the words, created a little vibration of iron, and it created a little squiggly in your fat in your brain. It squiggled there. And so what happens is every time the blood goes through the brain, that little squiggle is a little coil, and it makes a little electromagnetic pulse come out of it. And if that pulse, your consciousness sees that pulse as a bell. You follow me? You got that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now if you got in a car wreck or something, and that part got wiped out, then you'd have to reprogram, and these are people that are invalids until they get reprogrammed. But at least right now you're not in a car wreck. This is a bell. Okay, so when you put cyclohexane in your body, it goes through your entire memory pattern and it erases the bell. It erases a piece of the bell. It erases, you knew what a candle was, and you knew this was, and you knew what that was, and you knew all these responses. But it went through. The cyclohexane is now going through your body, erasing this. So let's say you had the... You'd learned what a carpet is, you knew what walls were, you knew what windows were. In other words, you knew what a room was and everything in it. You identified with that room. When I put the cyclohexane in your body, I have just changed your interpretation of that room to something else. You don't know that's a room anymore. And so now what I do is I can use something like HARP, I can use ELF waves, I can use a lot of things, and I can modulate those waves. And I can get a hold of this. I can take your bloodstream right now and transmit an ELF pulse into your bloodstream, and I can make you think entirely different and perceive entirely different than the way you did before I, first of all, poisoned you, and secondly, I put this electromagnetic frequency to you, and I can program you, and I will program you, and that is what's happening with vaccines. That's just one way of explaining it. And so you go ahead and get vaccinated. Unless you're really strong, bye-bye, because you're gone. You're going to go away. And where did we learn this? We learned this from over at Wright-Patterson. We learned this from the reticulans, the ones that aren't good. We learned this as a reptilian frequency, a reptilian character, a reptilian energy. We call it reptilian in force. Been around for a long time, very sophisticated today, way more sophisticated than it was 400 years ago. And so let me tell you something. I mean, Hitler was doing all this stuff. As a matter of fact, when I worked at the University of Michigan, I worked in the Randolph Laboratory, and my teacher was Dr. Katz. Dr. Katz knew Mengele. You know, I also worked with Wernher von Braun later. Katz didn't agree with Mengele, but he came over here, and he knew this stuff, and he taught me some of this stuff when I was very young. How did he get here? He came over on what's called Operation Paperclip. Look it up on the Internet. Operation Paperclip. Top Nazi scientist came over here and brought that knowledge with him, and that's what we did. Back in 1959, when I went in the Air Force, and this is on, I think I got this up in somewhere. Oh, it's on my bio on Pyridine, the bio we worked on the other night. When I was at the Army base down there in Little Rock, Arkansas, I was working, you know, this is 1959. I was being babysat. I was only, dating myself, like 15, 16 years old, and I was billeted at the Army base. Well, the people that were my handlers, we call them handlers in intelligence, were in a gay community down there. In that time, most of the biochemical workers down there are gay, and so they had already taken phencyclidine, which is cyclohexanine and piperidine, angel dust, PCP, and we're bringing it out to the street already. It became a street drug. Cyclohexane is a form of angel dust, just so you know that. Its brother is called ketamine, which is also, these were never tranquilizers. These are CIA and NSA programming tools that we used to go against the Soviets, who used the same things in the early stages of remote viewing. So bringing cyclohexane out and now injecting it in the general public. You take Jeffrey Dahmer. Here's a good example. It's in my book, Jeffrey Dahmer. He was not a murderer. He wasn't a serial killer. Until he was in for robbery, armed robbery. He was serving short time. He volunteered for an experiment where they shot him up with PCP and not LSD, other chemicals. He came out. He was programmed. He was an experiment. He became a serial killer. The government created him to see what he would do. So now that was a long time ago. So now what they'll do is they'll do that with you. We're losing our constitutional freedoms. In 1984, the Whitman guy, Stephen Whitman, the guy that was, Whitney was the guy that was shooting from the tower up there in Texas, in Austin, Texas, in your backyard there, killed a bunch of people before they got him. When they pulled him out of got his body, did an autopsy, first of all, they found two implants in him. Implants are something that's a little bit more developed. That's coming next. But right now, the vaccines, then they'll go from the vaccines to the implants. The implants were found in there, in his head. ABC made a movie out of it. And what he did is he created a bad thing, a bad act, so legislated away some gun freedoms over that. And that's what happened over a period of time. They'll program somebody to do something really bad, and they'll create a bunch of laws. And who's to say that 9/11 wasn't something created because you lost all your constitutional freedoms? And now, if you listen to what Bush is, you probably, most of you know, there are 600 prisons out there that are empty, that are occupied by Army personnel. It's on, we got the links to them on our website there. You can go out and see that. And that's where these people are going to go, because Bush has already said, well, when this avian flu comes, it doesn't exist. No, if you don't behave, we're going to give you martial law. Martial law means, boom, we're taking you out of there. And the federal management, FEMA, was created to enact martial law. It wasn't created. FEMA was fully in operation when New Orleans flooded and Katrina hit. FEMA did exactly what it was supposed to do for that disaster. Nothing. That's exactly what an agency was to do. And the reason they did nothing was to see what would happen when they did nothing, because they're for martial law.
Well, I heard they actually not only did nothing, but actually bombed the levees twice, from what I understand. Some didn't go off, and then the people that went out to repair the levees were actually shot in the back, four of the repairmen, and then disposed of. And from what I understand, our government had a hand in that.
Right, yeah. So what I have done with Pyridine, people don't understand this company yet, but they're starting to, is I've created a whole bunch of tools to combat all of this stuff, to build your immune system, to allow you to see into what's going on and to do something about it. You know, that's what the holographic projectors do. That's what our stuff does. And that's why these books that I'm writing, and by the way, we're doing a new thing. When you look at these things I post up on the blog, and then they go into the the back pages of my website, those are for my new book that are coming up. Because what I'm going to do, rather than illustrate that my book, Rays of Truth, has 500 and some odd pages and 412 illustrations, what I decided to do was not have any pictures in the new book and just let people go to the website when they have a question on something in the book. They'll have a great book there to explain it to them. I'm writing it down to the American public, and then go to the website and see pictures and animations that Don's putting together. So that's kind of, we have an attack. We're doing something about all of this stuff. The intelligence community is pretty much up in the air right now since Tenet fell on his sword for Bush. So there's a lot of good people that are gone now, and now it's out of control. But we are taking this incrementally. We do get help from above, but we don't expect spaceships to land in your backyard and solve the problem, because we created them. We're going to solve them. You can't move ahead spiritually without dealing with your own stuff. It's absolutely useless. If they came and helped us, it would only make us worse the next time around. So that's not going to happen. That's destructive. So anyway, any other questions, Don? Is there anybody listening yet? Or?
Oh, I actually, I had a few questions.
Go ahead.
One of those is back to the intelligence of those microbes. Are they really a group intelligence, like a dark group oversoul?
They are, when you deal with that, they are instruments of intelligence. They are not, per se, smart little creatures that run around. No, they are overshadowed. That kind of stuff is overshadowing. It's nanotechnology is what you're talking about.
Just biological nanotechnology.
Yeah, and of course, we've given some help,
Yeah.
First evidence of giving a little bit of help was Vietnam. The Haig-Kissinger depopulation policy brought it out when the Roche publication. He was in jail most of the time in those days because he was bringing up too much truth.
Here's a question for you.
Bottom line is the Japanese experimented with malathion in the early 50s for birth control.
Yeah.
So Agent Orange, of course, is malathion. And so that's what they were dumping in Vietnam. And they were trying to affect the Vietnamese women. But what they created over there was a woman that produced more kids. versus left. And then, of course, when they got into microbacterial warfare, they created the Legionnaire's disease, they created the Gulf syndrome disease.
Yeah.
There's only one hospital that deals with it. It's called microbacterial infections, and that's over here at Huntington Beach. And that's why we like our nuclear receptor, because our nuclear receptor destroys that. It just puts your body in a frequency where you're immune to it. And it pushes your pH over into alkaline. If you go over into alkaline, you don't have to worry about these microbacterial diseases or any avian flu or any of that because you're immune to it, or cancer. But if you don't push your vibratory frequency over, then you're not going to be around too long. You're going to be susceptible. And the same thing goes with using cell phones. They're very dangerous for a lot of people,
yeah.
And they're harmless to others. But unfortunately, the majority of our society is acidic, and they're going to have a lot of cancer here in another 8 years.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of it. And that's going to take out a big portion of it.
Well, what do you feel on as far as these prophecies and the coming end times as we enter into this new age? How do you see that as unfolding?
What I feel, my opinion, first of all, I don't feel anything for the negative stuff. It's a waste of time. Why? Because there's too many positive good babies here. If you ask me what my real job is, to make the world a better place, my thing is screw the adults. They've already screwed themselves. Get out of my way. Here I come with the kids. That's my trip. That's my personal view. I'm not that harsh, but so when I say screw the adults, what I want to do is heal the adults so they can be good to their own children. Because when I was a kid here, we didn't have smog. We didn't have pollution. We didn't have preservatives much in our foods, a little bit. I think I ate a little Wonder Bread. I had a little bit. That was about it. It was a lot, and the water wasn't 15% radioactive like it was. The oxygen content was higher. We didn't have the first 75 feet of algae in the ocean polluted that creates our oxygen. We didn't have our CO2 levels coming up so high that it's creating a push on the oxygen. We could lose our atmosphere like Mars did. That's what happened on Mars. It's called outgassing, and we all die in seconds. So we got to prevent that. There's a lot of things that weren't going on that could happen now. So as a result of that, I decided to focus on the kids. The only way you can focus on the kids is try to save the parents, or the people that want to make a difference. If you don't want to make a difference, don't come and don't bother me. If you want to make a difference, I'll be your servant. I have a very strong attitude. So with that, I don't really worry about any prophecies. I know about earthquakes. I've written on how they're created. It has to do with, you know, the aurora electrojet. Earthquakes are created by human beings that are angry. They amplify their aura fields, and they upset the aura of the Earth, which is called the growth-resistant generation aura field. In a Jupiter effect, when the planets align during a full moon, which creates a high surface tension on the human body, anger is transmitted to the sun. It creates a solar flare, or a coronal discharge, which then creates a solar wind, which then comes back through the aura electrojet of the Earth. It comes through the Earth. It comes through the North Pole and the South Pole. It distorts. It compresses the Earth in the beginning. It upsets the tectonic plates, and you have an earthquake. Not only that, I built an earthquake detector. You know, when Girl X was talking about being able to predict earthquakes tonight. Remember that?
You do.
Silicon dioxide swells. When, you know, like I have parrots, and I can sense earthquakes before they happen. Usually the local ones, I get pretty good on those when I tune into it. And what happens is my birds, for example, they'll start jumping around the cages a full minute before we have an earthquake. It'll be completely calm, and then they start jumping around and screeching like crazy in their cages, my parrots, and then we have an earthquake. They never fail. And that's
amazing.
What, you know, animals are very pure, very sensitive, especially parrots. You know, you learn a lot from them. And in the case of Girl X tonight, she's made up of silicon dioxide, and then she's one of these high-level sensitive. When the silicon dioxide starts to change in her body, then she interprets that feeling because of the gray matter, her conditioning over a period of time. We were talking about how the bell was formed. She can interpret that as an earthquake, and she gets the feelings, then that becomes a feeling, and she gets all the signs that she gets. Well, I took a piece of quartz crystal, and I sealed the energy on it both ends, and I measured the electromagnetic field coming off that piece of quartz through a Josephine junction into what's called a SQUID device developed by IBM. It's highly classified, and in the end that will warn us of a. It's in my book, How to Build One. You need to have some, you know, some parts are a little hard to find, but it's pretty simple, the overall concept, and it works. So you can build your own detector, but the only way I can build an external detector is understanding how it works in the human in the first place. So it all starts with anger, you know, and it tears a hell of a hole in the sun, you know, it really does. And if you look at the amount of earthquakes that we had in 1952 per hour versus what we have now, there's a big difference in the numbers.
Did you want to take call-ins, by the way?
Is anybody out there left?
Yeah, there's. We got quite a listenership right now, and that caller was hoping that he could call in and ask you a question.
I will do those.
Okay, well, I'll let you talk. You might hear some clicks because I got to reset the system again for callers because...
Do you have listeners left?
Well, and the listeners may notice that my voice is coming through a lot better without sounding like it's underwater, and that's because I literally took the whole system apart and made it for myself as an interviewer, but now I got to reset everything to allow call-ins so that I'm not going to be able to come into the system cleanly. I'm going to have to garble
like
in.
It's okay. You stay on there. Even though you're going to be distorted, that's okay.
Okay. Well, then go ahead, and I'll just make everything happen. You might hear some noises, but...
Should I just stop for a minute while you do that, or what?
Oh, no. Go ahead.
Okay, and when do the callers come?
The callers can come in. Well, by the way, let's give out the 800 number for them, and please don't call in for the next 5 minutes. But if you do want to call in, that number that you can call in is toll-free, 888-268-4313. Again, that's a toll-free number if you're in North America, 888-268-4313. And the international number, if you're in Canada or abroad, is 281-419-7697. And, I mean, if you are abroad, please definitely call in. We like broads. So 281-419-7697. And I'll get to work here. Thank you very much.
Great. So I'll look for callers, you know. That doesn't mean that by 13 listeners, use two cell phones and their landline, you know. Make it so that other people can call in. Anyhow, I'm having a good time doing this show tonight. It's a little different than my normal show, but, you know, I get fired up sometimes and sometimes change the topic midstream. That's my nature. I've always done that. I will say that in my recorded shows, I had a health, science, and energy show back in 1984 on KFOX Radio, here in Southern California. It was a pretty popular show. It was a small station, but I was really surprised how far that thing got. It kind of got to be popular after a while. I kind of gave it up after a year. It was too much work, but it was a lot of fun. And so I had a lot of recordings from those days. And I remember I used to talk about in 1980. Actually, I was talking about 1979. I said, you know, we're going to have terrorists here in about 20 years. And we're going to have briefcase nuclear bombs, and we're going to have to watch out for that. People thought I was nuts. You know, well, guess what? They're here now. Give an example. We have on our website nuclear radiation detectors. And I work, I have in two departments, the National Security Agency, the CIA, FBI, and Homeland Security. I got friends that tell me things. And I imagine a lot of you out there probably do too. Maybe some of you are even listening tonight that work for those agencies. Anyway, we have right now what's going on is we have every day enough material being stolen from construction sites down in the oil fields usually to make a dirty bomb. And one of the scenarios of the Homeland Security.
Okay, just to let you know, we are set for call-ins. People can call in at any time.
Okay, let me just finish this.
Okay.
Go ahead and then tell me this.
Okay.
I'm just explaining something, and then you go ahead and tell them that. So anyway, this material is being stolen, and what happens is they take it and they micronize it, and that means that they have a material now for a dirty bomb, and a dirty bomb doesn't go boom. It doesn't do that at all. What the dirty bomb is a flask container that goes into the MGM Grand and gets dumped in the air conditioning when you check into a room and you check out, or you just walk into a room being cleaned by a maid and toss it in and leave, and nobody even notices you were there, and then circulates this radioactive material with a long half-life throughout the entire system. Pretty soon after 2 or 3 days, people start getting sick, and pretty soon after a couple of weeks, people start dying, and then they start to figure out at some point it's radioactive. So that then creates a scare, and everybody vacates, Las Vegas, and boom, you know, you've got a problem with the American economy, because now they can do that in any city. That's one of the scenarios that's out there right now. So to protect yourself from that, that's why we have on our website those things called Nuke Alerts, a little thing that goes on your keychain, and it tells you that if you happen to be in a scenario where it's radioactivity, it starts chirping right away. And you just get yourself out of there, and you'll be fine, because the stuff won't kill you instantly. It takes a little while of exposure.
Okay, we have a caller online named Paul from Canada.
Okay, go ahead, Paul.
I'll swing him through.
All right.
You're on the air, Paul. Paul?
He was on the air.
He was. He, I guess he left.
Okay. Right. Call again, Paul. We dropped you there.
Okay.
So anyway, we'll wait for the next caller. Anyway, I'm glad we got to Canada tonight. That's pretty good. So anyway, we created a nuclear receptor quite a while ago. That's an important device. What it does is it works with the hydrogen atom, and in the case of the gold ones, it works with the carbon atom and the hydrogen atom. And when you look at how the genetics of the human being work, you know, you're born with 46 turns of DNA before you're born, before you take your first breath, 46 base pair turns. You got 4 amino acids constructing, making this. And what happens is when the fetus is being formed in the female, there comes a time when the DNA reaches completion, when the fetus starts to form. Originally, at first you have the beginning of the spinal cord and brain. Later on, the heart comes, circulation. Then the limbs, hands, and arms start to form. But what causes the human body, the mother, to discharge or give birth is the moment DNA reaches 46 base pairs per turn, it's time for the child to come out into the world, into this world. So the labor pains begin on that command. When you take your first breath in the air, you are reduced to 34 base pairs per turn. Well, in other words, if 46...
We're going to try this one more time. I'm putting Paul through now.
Okay.
Paul, you're on the air.
All right, guys. I just wanted to ask a question.
Sure.
Are you familiar with the chemtrail issue?
Yeah, I'm very familiar with the chemtrail.
Okay, because a lot of what I've been hearing of saying that they've been stopping or slowing down over the last several years. But I'm from Calgary, Alberta, and over these last couple months, there's been just a huge amount of them in the sky, very heavy when during the days that they're being sprayed all day consistently. So do you have any advice that you could give me for what to do here?
Well, yeah, the first thing you can do is get a nuclear receptor on. It protects your personal environment, changes your pH. Let me explain the birth of chemtrails. When I was a kid, I used to build jet engines. You know, I built a few of them. And what happens with what they found out back in the 50s, they're flying these jets at high altitudes, and what happens is they get a flame out, engine quit. Couldn't do a restart in those old engines, so the plane would basically go down. And so what happens is they were, the way the sun was shining in those days, it was a little bit different then. We had more of an ozone layer than we do now. But still, even with the way the sun shone, inside of a fuel tank at 40 degrees below zero in high altitudes, there would be an algae start to grow that would get in the fuel. And so this algae would then start to clog up the fuel lines, and they discovered that one day. That's what was causing the flame out. So they started putting chemicals in the fuel for the jets to get rid of the algae. And then what happened was the jet numbers, the JP numbers, jet propulsion fuel numbers changed. And so they began, as the ozone layer shifted and the sun became more ultraviolet, other kinds of strains, more stronger, started developing. They started using more and more toxic chemicals in the fuels of these jets. I think they're up to JP9 now. I remember JP4 was in the early 70s. And so what happens is these chemicals have a tendency to, make a hell of an exhaust note in the sky, a trail behind them. They're chemical trails. Then you bring in another factor. The biggest factor of all was the medfly. Medfly was the big joke, okay? Medflies didn't do anything. And this is where the government decided to spray malathion. So they would tell you, like Los Angeles, well, cover up your cars, close your windows. We're going to spray you up helicopters tonight with malathion for medflies. There's probably been two found in Southern California so far or something, maybe three. And they began to go around the city spraying them. Because what malathion does is destroys your central nervous system. So why not throw a little malathion in the JP8 or JP9? Slow things down a little bit, you know. Part of the Haig-Kissinger depopulation policy. However, when they've been watching this from space, I've seen a lot of the pictures from the satellites. If you go to NASA.com, you can see the pictures. NASA.gov.com. NASA.gov, something else. Just go to NASA, and you'll see the pictures from the satellites of what the trails are doing. And what they're doing, there's so many of them now, they're cutting the sunlight down to the surface of the planet. When you cut the sunlight down to the surface of the planet with these trails, you've got a second effect. You can now start spreading bacteria and viruses better. You can launch your fake avian flus. So it all works in concert. So just consider the contrails as a concerted effort to go with the rest of the stuff they're doing. And don't think that the intelligence that does all this doesn't think all these things. They got guys. One of my clients years ago when I had my electronics company was the Hughes think tank out in Malibu. And I got to be in there and I got to think with those guys because they needed a lot of equipment and stuff that I had to make their experiments, their Never Land experiments. And then there was a company called Rand Company, Rand Corporation, go back and look their history up. These were the boys that got into some interesting, that's what the Rand Corporation did is they made scenarios of the future. How could you change? How could you can do population control? That's what the Rand Company did, funded by the government. It's all classified, CIA funds. Black box funds come from drug imports, people like Manuel Noriega before he turned tail, bringing that stuff up. So, There are highly paid, and in the process they developed a computer called the Cray computer. You might study that a little bit, the Cray computer. They use those at the RAND. They use those more, the Department of Defense and NORAD has a few of them, but there's many more of them to figure out population control scenarios. And so from a from a viewpoint of a civilian like yourself, having never been in working in this stuff, it's a little strange. For me, it's not a big deal. We developed a product over at Paradigm. We sell the hell out of these. I've sold tons of them in Japan. They seem to be a great customer. A little thing called a star orb. And what it does, it gets rid of ELF in your house. And the way that got developed was, I was contacting the Pleiadians a long time ago, and Sannyasi started to show me how to hook up to the points of pyramids stainless steel wires to move energy around to the meridians of the body and to transmit energies off these wires off the points of these pyramids. And we developed this thing called a star orb. And what happened was, traveling with the National Health Federation, I go into Chicago, and some little old lady would come out, maybe 70, 80, 90 years old, and would say, "Oh, Dr. Bell, you know, we got a problem. I'm living by myself, and you know, I live in an apartment down in the suburbs here, and there's this gray van that was parked out in front of my little apartment, and with an antenna or something on it. It was kind of pointed at, and it was always there. And then the guy in the gray van, he moved in. He moved in next to me. There happened to be a vacancy, and he moved right in next to me. And now I can't sleep at night, and I get nervous, and I wake up in a cold sweat. What's going on, Dr. Bill? Is the government after me? I shined that on. I said, "God, this poor lady has really got some case of paranoia." But then I got down to Miami, and I go to Atlanta, and I go to L.A., and I go to New York, and I go to Schenectady, I go to Rochester, and I get the same story from many, many, many people, the same exact story. And so I began to see, this is back in the mid-70s, I began to see the scenario, and then Sannyasi says, "Now do we have your attention?" And I says, "Yeah," and then I developed the star orb, which you put in your house. It's a small device, goes up near your refrigerator, because the first place you connect it besides the ground is your refrigerator, because this ELF gets in your food and destroys the protein in it, and allows this microbacterial stuff to get in there. It shortens your life, and the food doesn't last very long. When you put the star orb on, boom, the food lasts a lot longer, you live a lot longer. Your salad lasts 3 weeks in there. I bet it doesn't last anybody's refrigerators now that long, because the ELF is after it. So I'm just pointing this out as one scenario of many, of all of the things that go on out there, chemtrails, that have been laid out by these giant Cray computers in places like the Hughes think tank, and other places in Los Angeles, the RAND Corporation, that do this kind of stuff for the government for population control. They have, I don't know if you ever heard of the Global 2000 report. I was one of the people that sold. I sold every one the government ever printed. It was a Global 2000 report. It was put together by 44 different countries, 19 different federal agencies, AEC, CIA, Department of Agriculture, everybody. And what it did, it said a couple things. It said that this world cannot live much beyond the year 2000 because this planet cannot support more than 10 billion people. It even said things like the destruction of the ozone layer is by high-flying jet aircraft, not, you know, spray cans. It really laid the truth out there, and it was done during Jimmy Carter's time, and it came out during Reagan's time, and I saw, and yours truly, there were 7 government printing office bookstores where you could buy it. I sold every one that they could print. The people were lined up to get those reports because they were truthful. And in that, they said that, that there were statements like every year, an area the size of Maine is desert. Desertification takes place by the chemicals from the chemical rain. We have acid rain, alkaline rain. Every year, a large part of the rainforest is destroyed. Every year, they said there were out of the 69 species of rare birds in Hawaii by the year 2000, there will only be 7 varietal ones left. There's about 3 left over there now. It laid it out perfectly. Of course, when they sold it out, they didn't make any more. So, I mean, this is what goes on, to answer your question.
Sure. Well, you know, thank you for taking my call. I'll tell you what gets me about these chemtrails, though, is that you see them and you wake up and the sky is perfectly blue, and by, you know, 1 or 2 in the afternoon, it's just this thick, gray haze everywhere. And, you know, people just don't realize it. They don't even see it. And you point
they're going to get cancer. They're going to get lung cancer. They're going to die. They're going to lose their bodies. They're going to be out there in the witness.
Sure. All right.
You know, protection plane of the great throne judgment day.
Yeah.
That's where they're going to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're unconscious. I mean, how many people use turn signals in your neighborhood? They're on cars. You know, you turn and you indicate. You've got to be psychic in Southern California because people are unconscious. They forgot about them.
Yeah.
They all they know is their cell phones are on, you know. People are unconscious everywhere. You walk into a store and say hi to somebody, they like What? You spoke? Oh, my God. This person spoke. I can't hear that. People are frozen. You know, they're in denial. You know, that's all the end of the day. And, you know, that's a big cleansing that's coming, and it's already started. It's well into motion right now, and that's just part of it. So you'll have to protect yourself.
Will do.
What we do, we make things to protect you and make you aware of them. We educate you how to do this and how to take care of yourself, and you'll be just fine. But, you know, the military is closing all their bases now. Why? Because they're going underground, because it's polluted. They know what they're doing. They're polluting the planet up here, you know. Bases are closing all over the world. Huge underground bases exist. I worked at some of them. They're huge.
I've heard about them.
There's cars and trucks down there and stoplights and all kinds of stuff. And there are a bunch of them around. They have these big machines that bore through rock a mile a day, creating these things as we speak, all over the country, all over the world.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah. So anyway, that's how it goes. Any other questions out there, Don? How are we doing?
Boy, we're doing good. We've got quite an audience here. I'm surprised for it being so late. It's quite excellent, but
we've been working late.
We
had a little auric field here. We kind of you guys be careful. You hang around Don and myself. We got so much energy. I run 24/7, 365. Because I'm only 62, so I'm pretty young yet at this. And there's no teenager that keeps up with me. I watch my daughter go to bed and get up in the morning. You know, she doesn't live with me now, but I see her and I'm still up, you know. And I feel great, and I don't get sick very often. A little bit goes through once in a while. Just got to condition yourself for energy and just live on energy, and that's all you really need to do. So all you guys, what we're doing is instead of getting the cyclohexane zap that they're putting, we're giving you the cyclohexanon-zap of good positive energy here tonight. Very clear aura cleansing going on out there, and you'll be up for 3 days.
We have Gayla from Tennessee.
Right, Don? We're not going to shut down tonight.
Well, that's right. We've got Gayla from Tennessee. Would you like me to put her through?
Yeah. Hi, Gayla. Hi there.
Hi.
How y'all
doing?
It's
a great honor
there,
to speak
Tennessee?
To you. Pardon?
So how y'all doing in Tennessee? I used to live there. I love Tennessee. I live in Arkansas, too.
It's beautiful here.
Where are you at
it.
Down there? Where do you live?
I'm in the Smoky Mountains.
Oh, yeah. Moonshine.
I'm on top of a mountain.
That's where the hot rod, the racing started up in those mountains with those shiners. I love it.
Yeah.
That's true, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, supposedly I'm around some vortex from many, many thousand millennia ago. The Palladians and stuff were here around... what's the big reactor here?
Oak Ridge.
Yes, Oak Ridge.
I know Oak Ridge.
I'm not too
there.
Far from there.
Been
know.
There, done that. Yeah.
Yeah, I just felt the energy to be
plant.
Here.
Yeah.
Yes. I wanted to ask you tonight, Dr. Bell, because I come to this planet in the mid-50s.
Oh, you're a young girl. Teenager.
Yeah, well.
Pleiadian teenager, huh?
Yeah.
Still chewing your bubble gum?
Yeah,
there you go.
Every now and then.
Yeah, you got to have your bubble gum.
Yeah, here lately it's been difficult. I bite my tongue too much. I had to quit.
Yeah, that's what happened. Too much bubble gum. A bazooka, did you ever chew that?
Yeah.
I used to chew bazooka. And you blow a bubble on your face.
Exactly. Yeah.
No,
sticks everywhere.
I've been to Tennessee. Yeah, go ahead.
But I wanted to ask you a question.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a paradigm, I guess. You know, in my quest to understand universal law, is it not true that we must have light to balance the darkness just as well as darkness to balance the light?
Good question.
For learning.
You know, light is life, and darkness is absent of life. Life is volute, and darkness is involute.
Mm-hmm.
Light is finite in consciousness, darkness is infinite.
Mm-hmm.
So the real wisdom's in the dark, just so you know that. It's
mm-hmm.
okay to be in the dark, because
mm-hmm.
you create the light. But, you know, that's something that most people aren't ready to do yet. So to back up a couple billion years of evolution, yeah, it's real important to have both. Back on this pragmatic level where our bodies are, when we're in darkness, we get viruses and bacteria growing. So we need the light. We need to balance it. We need to preserve the light.
Mm-hmm.
Not for our spirit. You know, a lot of people say human beings are are here for a spiritual experience in their incarnation? Mm-hmm. Wrong statement. Human beings are spiritual, and they're here for a human experience, okay? That's
exactly
what we're doing. And the human experience is necessary because it allows little animals to evolve, your pets, your dogs, your cats. You're here to evolve them, and they'll teach you the basic
mm-hmm.
stuff. And that's life. That is the infinity of creation itself. So for that reason, we need the light. We need the balance. Because, you know, the chickens go to sleep at night and they wake up in the morning, and that's nature telling you something.
Balance.
So we need the light, and we need to cherish the light. We need to preserve the light, not for our spiritual evolution per se for ourselves, but for the spiritual evolution to where we are and who we are. So for that reason, you need the contrast. Okay?
That's where my thoughts are exactly.
Yeah.
It's a long voyage. And
yeah.
And you get there eventually.
Get there eventually, and don't take it personal. Man, so many people get caught up in taking it personal. Can't do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, when you take it personal, you're no longer having fun.
Exactly. You know, you know, humor is the biggest part of science. It's the missing part of the equation.
Yes.
I love to blow up laboratories. When I was a kid, you know, people all hear about the cool stuff I did that made things happen. But you should hear all this. One time in a science lab, I mixed ammonia with sulfuric acid and ammonia and create this black gas. You know, it looks like the fire department came.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of fun blowing up laboratories. I set one of my friends on fire, but luckily he had a bib on one time.
They probably locked their lab doors when they saw you coming.
Yeah, they saw me coming. And I was in Arkansas for a little short time. I was building time bombs. And pipe bomb, just for the hell of it, you know. Today you'd be locked up for terrorism, but you know, I was into explosives, and oh my God, I had a lot of fun. I had a lot of humor down there, you know. We'd go out on a camping trip or something with a school for exploring science, and you hear a big explosion. It was me blowing up something, a rock or something. You know,
oh yeah.
I was a real mess. They hated me. You know, I wasn't too cool. I was very.
Wow.
I was Dennis the Menace. And it's really funny because of being Dennis the Menace, Jay North, who played that part, became a great friend of mine in the movie days. You know, I knew Jay very well when he was younger.
Yeah.
Karma, you know.
Well, I have to say, Dr. Bell, I just recently come into contact with your work and you know, I've read some about you.
Are you one of my 13 listeners?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I don't know if that's good or bad.
That's cool. You guys are so incognito, you know.
Yeah. You're a very intriguing person.
Yeah, I need a. Don't send me any bad emails, though, because I don't like those. I'm afraid
never.
Of it. I'm in denial.
Yeah,
I don't account for myself very well. So just send me good stuff. Well, you can send anything you want.
You're a mess.
Huh?
I bet you're a hoot to be around all day.
I'm a real problem, let me tell you. I'm insane, and somehow I'm dealing with it one day at a time.
Oh, know? Well, you know what? They told me I was insane from the time I was a little girl because I didn't conform to their status quo.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I get up in the morning, and God starts laughing. And the reason he's laughing is I think I know what I'm going to do that day. At the end of the day, I haven't done any of it.
Exactly.
And I figure out whatever that experience was, and that tells me the reality of where I'm at. So, I mean, that's kind of how you do it.
I gave up on planning my day a long time ago.
Yeah.
Learn to flow with life.
When I was a big entrepreneur, I used to try to plan businesses.
Yeah.
The bottom line was, don't forget it. That's not what you do anymore.
Yeah.
I'll let Don plan businesses. That's what he does.
You never know where it's going to take you from one moment to the next.
Yeah.
You just flow with life. That's living.
Here.
That's the true living.
Yeah. It's there's never a dull moment.
I got things
I can do in every direction, you know?
Yep. Well, remain positive and plant your feet in the right direction, though.
Yeah.
Well, it's been great talking to you, Dr. Bell.
Yeah,
I look forward to many more informative
shows. Bubble gum, I love it.
Huh?
So you have some fun in the Smoky Mountains with your bubble gum.
And my doggies.
And your dog, you got dog. What kind you got?
Poodles.
Oh, yeah, poodles.
I'm a dog groomer.
Huh? Are your poodles very arrogant?
Am I what?
Are your poodles very arrogant?
Arrogant? Oh, yes. They're very vain.
What sign are they?
Many, all signs.
You don't know, huh? You don't
I raise poodles.
Uh oh.
Yeah.
You're in poodle
I have the
hell
little
now.
Teacups.
If they heard that, they're going to be mad.
I know. Well, they're asleep right now.
Oh, that's good. They didn't hear what you just said.
Yeah. Anyway, you have a great evening, Dr. Bell, and I'm really just wonderful listening to you.
Well, I had fun tonight. I don't get to do this every night, but once in a while I take a little time. I decided that, you know, we're going to create a big network here, so I wanted to feel what it was like to make a jerk out of myself live. I can, on the tape, you know, I don't mind the microphone when I'm in my studio doing something with nobody around, but when I get on a live mic, it scares me, you know.
Why? You're doing great.
It scares the hell out of me, because somebody like you might, you know, blow a bubble in my face with your chewing gum.
Oh.
And I wouldn't know what to do, you know.
Nobody can throw anything at you that you couldn't handle.
Yeah, I'm sure it's true.
You handle yourself quite well.
I have fun, you know.
You take care, dear.
All right, thanks.
Bye.
Yeah. So how's Don doing in the background?
Oh, I'm doing excellent.
Yeah, we got any listeners, or we just let that last go-around get rid of them all? What's happening out
there? Oh, well, I think we're still maxing out on listeners.
Are we?
Oh, yeah.
You better ask some more questions, or I'm going to shut the whole thing down here soon. I better get a question.
You better get some call-ins.
Yeah, otherwise I'm going to stop.
And for those of you who are wondering what that number is, again, just to give it to you, it's 888-268-4313. I hope you can hear it through the gargle. And, of course, my dog is trying to emphasize that you should be calling as soon as you can.
And then that's your studio engineer I thought you just hired?
That's the one.
Yeah, you don't pay very well. I love it. And you can go to my website, too. This is www.pyradyne.com, spelled P-Y-R-A-D-Y-N-E. It's all over the Internet anyway. And then you can always type in Dr. Fred Bell in the search engine and see what I'm up to. And we're going to have a heck of a seminar. You guys need to come to my seminar, and we'll run all these lasers, and you'll see all kinds of stuff happen. You might be used to it. Some of you might be new. But we have materializations. Everything happens here. And that's coming up in May. That would be a big seminar, I guarantee it. So.
Okay, we have another caller online. I'll put him right through before our dog gets mad.
Okay. Good day, Dr. Bell. This is an honor. This is Scott from Australia. How are you going?
Good. How's it going down there? What part of Australia are you in?
Near Brisbane.
Okay, Brisbane. Great.
An hour west of Brisbane.
Yeah?
I've been emailing you a couple of times. You had a few questions for you, but anyway, I got some different questions for you now.
Yeah, I need questions.
And I just sort of read through about 50 pages of your book already.
That's really good. Father and I have been with it in a while.
The question that really gets to me, I'm trying to figure out what the master plan. Why they're building prisons all over the U.S., what do you think their plan is there? I don't know if you want to go into that.
The master plan is martial law.
Are they going to do with all the people?
Huh?
What are they going to do with all the people when they put them in prison?
Probably the same thing they're doing down there in Florida, or in Cuba down there right now. They keep them there forever. See, when you get arrested under martial law, the way the laws work in the United States, I don't know how they are down there in your country, is that you lose all your constitutional freedoms. You can go away. You'll have no rights to contact your family, nor an attorney or anything. You're gone. You are gone because you were arrested under martial law. You weren't conforming to their idiot plans, and that's why they've got so many prisons. See, Bush was playing around up here listening. You know, he was playing around with this virus. First, they tried to play the game down in New Orleans, down there a little bit. That didn't go over too good because FEMA screwed up so much. You know, FEMA showed what they really do, which is nothing. So that created such a pop, a negative thing against Bush, they couldn't pull their little martial law game. They tried it. They mentioned it. They were going to do that. And his dad used to talk about it all the time, too. And so then, when he realized that with the avian flu, Rumsfeld and all these people own a portion of the stock that makes it. Back in March of this year, the plan was, him not knowing what was going to happen to Libya and everything, the plan was to make 25% of America, you know, take this vaccine. So they built a plant. I think it was in Texas. Len Horowitz would know. But they built a plant, Roche did. laboratory, and they manufactured 25%, enough vaccine to do 25% of America, and of Tamiflu, which is the, you know, the PCP angel dust vaccine, as far as I'm concerned. But they didn't say anything in the public, but I just did it. So then they, in October last month, then they launched their little crusade. Well, people like Len Horowitz is out there, and he's a hell of a powerful guy now. Len Horowitz went in the Senate and upset their little apple cart a couple times. So I mean, he can really ruin their day. But in the process of launching that back in October, Bush mentioned several times that you know, where you go in your house, we're going to quarantine you in there. If you get this stuff, this pandemic is going to go on. Of course, they quoted the hell out of 1918, which had nothing to do with birds, the pandemic. The pandemic in those days, by the way, was way different than now, and the immune systems were way different. And back in those days, we only lived to be 50 years old anyway. Now the average is 80-something here. So they don't educate you on the truth. And what happens is, you know, he started throwing the martial law, and he really wants to fill those prisons up. Have you been on the website where you can see pictures of them and stuff? Because we got them posted, you know, links and.
No, I tried to find them, and no, I couldn't.
Yeah, they're on.
I did a search.
Yeah, they're. No. See, Don, you got to get that straight. It's on. It's if you go into Dr. Fred Bell, which is on there. You go into Dr. Fred Bell. And then there's an article I wrote. It was on the front page of Blog and Service. And you go into the archives, and you'll see, he calls it past shows or something, and then those will come up, and then there's links to all that. There's articles that Len wrote. There's articles that I wrote, and there's links. It's back in there. You'll find it. It's in one of the more recent postings, and it's always there. And on there are links and pictures. And there's a photographer that was going out. I knew about this stuff about 15 years ago because I was still doing some stuff with National Health Federation and other people, and they were talking about it. And when the photographer got near the place and started taking pictures of it, and this is all shown on the website, the military was putting caps over their head, and they were outside, and they couldn't do anything about it, and they're photographing with telephoto lens, and they're all, like, covering themselves up. And there's a lot of George Bush activity. I mean, the people from his administration are going in and out of these things. So, because we've been staking them out. Some people have, not me, but others. And there's quite a bit of activity, but they have zero prisoners. And then you can go on the search engine, and I think you click in Google army personnel maintaining prisons, something like that, and it'll take you right to the site if you can't find it on our website. But it's on the website, you know. Where input like you have helps us, guides us to, you know, make it a little bit clearer, because we got so much going on there. If you don't know your way around, but we are sorting out these two websites, Paradigm Blog and Service and BBS Radio. But we're in a growth curve, and this information needs to be up there. It really does. So you will find it.
Dr. Bell, can you still hear me?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
Yeah, I just wanted to start. Going to do like what the IG Farben and I think the Rockefellers did back in World War II. With the Jews, you know, use them as free labor and test all these new and wonderful controlling thing, devices, whether it be chemicals or so forth for people control.
Well, what people don't realize, you remember, I don't know if you had it down there, but the milk carton, missing children, big business. Milk cartons used to have lots and lots of faces of missing kids in America. You know, yeah, we have a few cases that go up on the news media. But every day, a lot of kids disappear. You know, usually loose family ties, things like that. A good portion of these children are abducted. Some people say aliens, some people say the government gets them, but they're abducted and they're taken to centers and they become a human genetic and experiment. So a lot of children today are being used just for that, for these kinds of genetic experiments, and they disappear off the radar. There's a big sector that's doing that. There's a part of those children become slaves for sex, and a lot of them don't. A lot of them just are used for human genetic experiments. So there is a very dark side to what goes on with experimentation on human beings. So to go into the Third Reich comparison, nothing's changed. There are a lot of genetic engineers still alive that did a lot of work in the Third Reich that still today do a lot of work. And it's alive. That research is alive and well. There's a very, very dark side here that I haven't really gone that far. I don't want to really scare people, but I may go there someday. People aren't really ready for the truth of what really goes on out there. And it's a pretty high volume of children worldwide that are abducted, never to be seen again, you know, for these experiments. So, yes, genetic research goes on very healthily. And most of the drug companies, like Surly is the one that made angel dust, ketamine and PCP, most of the drug companies and have some very dark beginnings. And they aren't doing too well today. I mean, a bottle of antibiotics or tranquilizers that costs $125 costs something like 75 cents to make, not a profit. And then if you look at the oil industry up here, I don't know what your gas prices are, but, you know, Exxon is posting a $9.6 billion profit in the last quarter. So what they do up here is they take, when America goes to have its vacation time in the summer, they jack up the oil prices so damn high that, you know, then they rape everybody. And then, of course, when nobody's traveling, they lower them in the wintertime. But each year it's proportionally higher than the year before. And it's the system is 99% corrupt. And I'm sure, what do you guys pay for gas down there in your country?
Well, it went up to about $1.30 per liter.
And so the American dollar, that's about about 99 cents, our money down there then. So it didn't go up too much proportionately. You guys are lucky. Your government's a little freer than ours, aren't they? I mean, aren't they a little bit more mellow?
Well,
I know they're corrupt as hell when you go to import a car or something, but
actually,
isn't there a little bit more mellowness than
freer
living down there?
I was actually looking at the alternative fuels, like, you know, the vegetable fuels and the... and I did a search, and the Australian government is actually behind it. They're supporting people using alternatives to diesel.
Oh, yeah, well, that's good. You know,
yeah.
One of the big things I did on the Art Bell Show is I pushed hemp. You know, my dad worked for Henry Ford.
Yeah, I know. I've listened to your show.
Okay,
I'm the one
that's told about 10 times. Henry Ford hated petroleum companies. He hated them. He had hemp. A hemp will fix the greenhouse. The hemp tree produces four times more oxygen than a normal plant. And Canada's starting to do hemp fuel now. And it only costs a couple cents a gallon to make it. And you can even buy on the Internet machines that will make you about 300 gallons. You know, if you got a place to set it up, you can make your own fuel now. It's called ethanol. And all you got to do, put it in your car, is change the map settings on your fuel injection. And if you got an old car with carburetors, you just change the jets. And you can run it, and it's clean. You can breathe it. It's water and carbon dioxide. It's all that comes out. No carbon dioxide whatsoever. What are you guys using down there for fuel alternatives?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm doing, you know, QA for a major composting facility.
Yeah.
And we get about 100 to 200,000 liters of waste vegetable oil per day.
Wow.
So I've gone, you know, how about we start using that to run our machines off of, our loaders. We use about 1,000 litres a day of fuel.
Wow.
And I said, well, how about we do that? And, still going to take some convincing. But apparently our parent company, they've got one company that actually already does convert it into a clean fuel source for the trucks.
That's great. I'll tell you a little secret you can do. I did it up here. You can take a pyramid, you know, like the wire pyramids that we make.
Yep,
you can make little
stuff.
I have them actually here. They're little 1 or 2 inch based pyramids. We make a product line from these little pyramids. They're little pyramids. They're about 1.5 inches tall, and they're 2 inches. You take a solder. You take a 1 gallon can, square can. And you take a bunch of, and figure out how many little pyramids you can put together at the bottom of that can, weld them together, and then go to another level of that can and put another layer of pyramids. And so you end up with that whole can, you know, 1 gallon can, full of these little pyramids. You follow me? But they're little open face. They're little wire pyramids. The displacement of the amount of fuel in that can with all those pyramids in there is probably about 5%, hardly anything.
Yep.
You'll find
you'll find that
what happens is with those pyramids in there, especially with the fuels you're using, that you'll get twice as much gas mileage as you're getting right now with that one little experiment. I did that for General Motors using gasoline. And I went over to the chairman of the board and presented it to him because one of his friends was one of my friends. So I had an in to the chairman of the board at GM. This is back in 78. He told me he couldn't do it. I said, why? He says, you know why? He says, this is a really great idea because even gasoline burned cleaner. There's no smog. It was, the carbon dioxide level is way down with the pyramid energized fuel. Because remember that the fuel is carbon atom based. And so what happens is it takes out in fuel, if you have the atomic structure in perfect balance, it becomes much more efficient. The way that they crack the cracking process with fossil fuels up here is so crappy. There's so many impurities in it that the fuel burns inefficiently in a motor. But when you make that fuel 100% efficient, it burns much better. And on top of that, you can then inject water in it because the combustion is more even. So that's something you might want to try at some point. Just prove me wrong on that. It'd be fine, you know. Because you're doing
I'm
impressed. But I'm just saying it can make it better.
What about using it for maybe, have you ever heard of compost tea?
Yep.
You were just saying then you could use it for fuel and sort of enhancing fuel. I wonder if you can use it, compost is carbon-based.
Yeah.
And that might help stimulate certain microbes in brewing. And
oh, yeah. It works great. And when you're growing things, we make a device called an irradiator that really makes things grow good. There was at one point years ago up at Big Sur back in the 70s that the growers up there of the smoking herb used to buy my irradiators, and it potentized their herb like many, many, many times. And they were growing them in blinds because they were getting surveilled by helicopters. So it was real interesting to see them use this technology to make the THC content many, many times higher. It makes plants, this energy takes plants, and it makes it go to the core, the honey of their essence. So if you take a plant to the core of its essence, you get a much better plant. So growing, the other thing is that people will take our 6-foot pyramid and they'll wind a copper coil in it, and they'll water, they'll process the water through it like that. So we did a lot of this stuff in the old days. I mean, I don't do much of it now because we got more into the receptor technology, which is small little pyramids on a round grid system that we use for the human body. I kind of got away from that, but I could build a receptor huge and make it very efficient. And there's a lot of stuff we can do to enhance what you're doing. But that's probably putting too much pressure on it because you need to go one step at a time, and we're probably at a point where we'll work together with some of this stuff. The main thing is what's beautiful is that you're getting people involved in making a difference in a humanitarian and oxygen-producing environment, because all carbon dioxide does is make more oxygen. You know, that's really what's great when you use it that way.
Yeah, I'm just wondering about this. You talk about the ozone layer, and I heard you, I think, last show talk about it, you know,
yeah.
And this show just that's disappearing.
Yeah, aircraft killing that.
Yeah, how can we, that seems like, is that one of the major problems?
No, it's going to be a major problem for the immune system. Me, somebody like myself, it won't bother me at all because I can handle infrared and ultraviolet. Doesn't bother. I like ultraviolet, but most people, their immune systems, they don't have what's called auric offset. And if they don't have auric offset, then ultraviolet produces free radicals and drives their body into the acid range. So unless they have a way of alcalizing their bodies, it's going to hurt a lot of people. And the ozone layer is pretty much gone in Antarctica. It's gone now. There is none down there. So you don't see much civilization taking place there. And it's coming this way. Yeah, I forget what the rate of it is. But it's not as big a concern as the earthquake stuff is in the storms. What you're going to see now is these 5-magnitude, 6-magnitude storms because the human element of anger and all of that is being amplified so greatly now in the Jupiter effect. Into the sun, and the sun is creating these huge solar flares and these huge, coral ejections, as they call them. And every one is numbered now by NASA. They give them CH numbers, and it's a real concern. That's where the dangers lie. It's going to take a lot of people out, you know. The storms are just... Katrina was the same size of a storm as they would have on the planet Jupiter, which is 11 times bigger than the Earth. Jupiter is 11 times bigger than this planet. And we're having the same size storms as they have there. That ought to tell you something.
What about
a little out of balance, just a bit.
And what about
Hunt? You know, people are still unconscious to it. But I'm not worried about the 600 prisons with this other stuff going on. Their plans will never make it that far. They already went by the wayside with the vaccination thing, you know, so it's not a concern of mine.
I thought it might be part of the underground, government?
Yeah. It's everywhere. I mean, that government's all over the place. Mm. I used to have a lot of fun with them because I formulated vitamins in different countries, and I used to work with all the equivalents of FDAs, and what's legal in one country is not in another. You know, the photogenic thing in Gold-Cola that I spoke about for getting rid of radiation in your body, is you can use that all you want in Japan, but I went to Europe and tried to use it, and they wouldn't let me use it. They called it a tonic. And B-complex, which is important for the central nervous system to prevent, you know, lack of oxygen in the system, they won't let me use B-complex in Japan. I went up to Canada, and I think your country, and they won't let me use amino acids because they call them drugs, but I can use them all day long here. So every country I worked in with the formulation process has a different rule. So they're always trying to take something apart, you know. It's the way it goes. It's just a joke. You can't take any of this seriously, you know. I've been known to formulate vitamins to put things in them that aren't on the label that are good for you but illegal. Wouldn't say that hasn't happened in the past. I'm not doing it now, but I did it for a while. I used to put B15 in all my vitamins, and that was illegal here. And B15 is part of what's called a nitrilicide. B12 through B17 are called nitrilicides. Nitrilicides are antioxidants that prevent carcinogens, cancer-causing agents, to manifest in the body. And I knew Ernest Krebs, the real discoverer and perpetuator of B15 was Ernest Krebs Sr., and I knew him at the National Health Federation, and he launched that in Russia. And people that took B15 did not have heart attacks anymore. Heart attacks don't, and B15 don't mix. It won't happen. But, you know, B15 is totally illegal in vitamins here. If you want to go to the health food store, ask for N,N-dimethylglycine. That's N,N-dimethylglycine. Take those pills, and it's way better than aspirin. But guess what? The drug companies don't make that, so they're going to tell you to take Bayer. And Bayer, guess what? IG Farben, baby. Bayer, Mr. Bayer, was one of the guys that built Auschwitz. And now he makes your aspirin for your fake heart attack. You know, it's so funny. It's so funny. I look at this world and just laugh because I know all the families. I've met them or been around them. You know, my parents work with them. I've worked with them. I know their games. And I know them well.
Yeah, how do they get off on doing what they're doing?
Who's going to stop them? Nobody's going to stop them. They control everything. They control the cops, you know. The DEA up here, the Drug Enforcement Agency, what they do up here in the United States, because if you're a mule for the CIA and you break the boundaries, then the DEA comes in. If you're cool, you'll never have a problem. As soon as you look, that's what happened to Manuel Noriega. A friend of mine did the extraction down there and brought him out. He piloted the ships up here that carried him on board, you know. It's interesting, you know. It really is.
They're just lacking a little bit of love, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, me versus a lot of people that are out there making these claims, you know, and they know about stuff. I help do the stuff, you know. I was part of the extraterrestrial cover-up when I was in the Air Force. That's why I left the Air Force, because they were making me part of the cover-up. You know, I couldn't do that to the American people, you know. I was part of a lot of the problems in the very beginning because I worked for these people that did this stuff, you know. But I got away from it, but I've seen it. I know how it works. So I'm not saying this is what I think. I'm from Missouri in a way, you know. If I haven't seen it and experienced it, I'm not going to talk about it, you know. But I've seen a lot of things in my time. And I continue to see things. This has not stopped. It's more interesting daily. You know, there's more stuff to look at now that's really stupid. There's so much of it. It's so stupid now you can't hide it anymore. You know, and then I make things that make it go away. That's the other part of it. That's really fun.
There's also a lot of
effects on the human body. And we can fix about anything if you listen to us and try out what we're doing, you know.
I like what you're talking about becoming invisible like Jesus, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that time machine did it.
Teach me that one.
That's going. Yeah, that'll do it. I mean, it's just going, just breaking pace with the cemented concert imagination of human beings that are all time synchronized into the time sequence. You know, the one of the biggest programmers of that is daylight savings time up here. That is done purposely, and this year they changed it by 1 month in the West Coast. It derails your immune system because you have a consciousness that's geared in nature to change time with the moon and the sun and the precession of the equinox and the precession of the solar cycle. And when they start jumping your time to make you pursue events, it completely derails your immune system, and it's a game. And so daylight savings time is a great form of mental programming because it completely derails people for a couple of months. It's nothing. There's no difference than that than jet lag. It's the same thing. You know, I know how to prevent it, but a lot of people aren't ready for the ounce of prevention that we provide. That's some of the stuff that I do. I make things that fix these things. That's what I do. Yeah. And you probably are you familiar with what we do at Paradise?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
I've been listening to your show so many times. I've got some stuff coming.
Yeah, and by the way, one of your hot rod girls down there that runs the radio show is going to be on blog.
Yeah.
Did you know that? I forget her name, but...
Liz Miller.
Liz Miller. Yeah, Liz is coming. Liz is coming to blog. She's a piece of work, you know. We're spreading. You know, she's one of my distributors down there.
Okay, yeah, I've thought about helping out and doing the same thing.
Yeah, we'll do it. We need distributors. Yeah, anybody out there, you 13 listeners, you should all be distributors. Make more money helping the planet.
I haven't even gotten the receptor
month,
yet.
You know? I need help. Yeah.
Let me see. Oh, I don't focus too much on the negative, but, you know, I'd like to stay in this body before I go to the astral body too soon. And you're talking about, you know, our atmosphere going like Mars, where we lose the oxygen.
It's outgassing, yeah.
How can we, I'm a bit of a problem solver. That's why I'm composting. I'm just trying to look after the biggest problem.
Yeah.
And
there is another influence of help around the corner, but they're not going to, it's going to be pretty down close to the 11th hour before this divine intervention, any of it takes place. The things are going to get a lot worse, unfortunately, before they get better. You know?
Yeah.
Unless people start doing something about it right away. You can change it tomorrow. You know? You don't have to go. But people aren't quite getting it yet. You know? It takes more than a few voices in the wilderness.
I love what you say in the front of your, if I can read it out, your, in the front of your rays of truth, crystals of light.
Yeah.
The very front. Because I hear all these people saying, you know, the prophecies are, it's the end of the world and all the rest of it in the Bible.
Yeah.
But in the front of your book, you say, prophecies are for the weak who have lost their way in ignorance and sought history from a ship of fools who likewise lost their course and admitted defeat. So live in the now and create your own reality rather than riding in the wake of another, and give our prophets some time to sleep.
Yeah, I wrote that.
You know, I absolutely love that part of the book, and in fact, I wish everybody would live that, because really we do create it and we can make it all possible right now. You know, Dr. Bell lives that every day, that philosophy.
I do.
Yeah.
And Don and I argue about that sometimes. That's what's fun about Don. He's learning about this channeling and learning about all this stuff, and I say, well, it's just all part of growth, but that's not where I'm coming from. I've been there, done that. And it's not a put-down. It's everybody's got to go through it. It's got to go through it. That's their reality. You know, that's where the Bhagavad Gita comes in, you know. Studying that a little bit really teaches you about reality. I don't know if listeners out there are familiar with that, but that's a real interesting story, that battle over there in India, you know.
Do you have a theory why people give up to, say, prophecies? Is it because of a lack of a certain nutrient, like silicon?
Their souls are not that evolved. They got more lessons to learn. There's a nutritional side to it and all that, but basically and it's sad, and it's a stifling of the growth process, and that's where divine intervention comes in. There's 9 steps in the White Brotherhood, and there's one of them called renunciation, and then there's one called retribution, and retribution is a bit harsh. That's when Christ doesn't turn his cheek to be slapped, you know. he gives you an uppercut when you go to slap him the second time and pounds you on the head. And that's kind of where we're at with some of this. There is a fire out there, but we're not ready to light it yet. It's too premature, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. The fire gets lit at the last stage of the nine initiations of the White Brotherhood, if you want that form of reference, which would be you could study Alice Bailey or something. And with that, that's a terrestrial comment, but basically what happens is we come up to the edge of existence, and we either are going to go into the great dark that the lady from Tennessee was talking about, and we're going to go hibernate for a while, and God's going to go to sleep, take a nap, and have no dreams, or we're going to continue on with this period of manifestation and get it right for once. So that's kind of the choice that's made by this Christing force that's in the universe. And that's where all the games go away. You know, everything goes in the game box. But we're not quite there yet. There's too much fun going on right now between the forces and everything. So,
what a time to be alive.
Yeah, it's a good time to be alive. I mean, I'm like Don, myself, you, we're all here at the right time, you know. I always think that as long as you're doing the work, you're at the right place at the right time. That's been my philosophy. If you're not doing the work, you could be anywhere in the wrong time. But it's saved my butt a few times, I'll tell you. You know, it's okay to screw off once in a while. You got to let the steam out. There's no getting away from that. It's the human side. Just don't hurt anybody. When you have your recreational times, and get back to work when the time is right. You know, vacations are good. You know, I'm a Leo. I can take them forever. So I don't take them at all because they're too habit forming. You know, I got to keep working.
Yeah, been great talking to you, Dr. Bell. I just want to let any other listeners out there.
Have we got any listeners left, Don? Or we blow everybody off.
Oh, we still got quite a number of listeners.
Really?
Oh yeah.
I can't believe people are up. It's 10:30. So it's past the bedtime.
I might just give you one last question and get off the phone.
Okay.
Fear versus love.
What is it?
Fear versus love. Yeah, and critical, and like you were talking, creative visualization. You know, like I'm thinking, you know, I could either be a fearful and have all these ideas of dark forces taking me away because I'm trying to do something positive.
Yeah.
Or I could look at and visualizing, you know, white light around me and being protected. So that sort of creative visualization.
Okay, here's what happens. Let me explain this to you. You want a bodhisattvic explanation, or you want something that's soothing to the emotions? Which one do you want?
Give me both if you've got time.
Okay, soothing to the emotions. When you surround yourself with white light, what is white light? It's the life force of all seven levels of consciousness. You're supplying yourself around. You're putting around yourself the white light. You're allowing consciousness of all sorts to protect you, assuming that the white side of it's stronger than the dark side, even though the dark side is hidden in the light. Okay.
Mm.
Downside of that is if you have a hard enough, dark enough force, and you're a strong enough entity, which you may be, you're not going to do shit. I mean, excuse the language, but that's about what you're going to get for giving yourself white light and projecting love. You're going to actually feed. There are forces out there that are very negative that eat love up for breakfast. Okay? There's only one defense from that, and that's project yourself into it, your essence. Give it all you are. Go for broke, and you'll be fine every time. A lot of people don't understand that yet, but that's the bodhisattvic way. Put 100% of your force into it. And that's what martial arts do, when artists do when they do their chi force. It's all. They aren't going to feel pain when their hand hits a brick. That brick doesn't exist. And they aren't giving it love. They aren't going through that brick with love. They're going through it with themselves. And that's what you have to do. You have to give it yourself. Then all the channelings and predictions and everything don't exist anymore. Because you are God. And at that moment, you're realizing it. And you're eating that dark force up, and you're having it for breakfast. Because if you don't, it will you. So that's how it goes. Does that make any sense?
Definitely.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
I might get back into Aikido as well.
Yeah, Steven Seagal's teacher is one of my friends, and I learned a little bit. Aikido is I'm not quick enough for that one. That's too dangerous. Every time I practice Aikido, with my own force, I get screwed up. So I just hung out with Kung Fu and Jiu-Jitsu and some of the milder forms. Aikido is right, get up front, personal. And what I love is the discipline of Aikido. It's the best mental discipline of all the arts. and that is, the mind is the slayer of the real. If you're in Aikido and you're up close to a guy that's three times your size and you're right in his face, and you have one thought other than taking care of business, you're a done puppy. That's a great, it's a great discipline. It's the most revered form of martial arts there is.
It's a
BDNL. But I'm not any good at it. I don't have that. Steven Seagal, people don't realize he's from Kalamazoo, Michigan. He's a homeboy. I'm from Ann Arbor. And he went to Japan when he was 16 years old and started studying in the temples all by himself and learning that. And he was the real deal, you know. And he started making movies over there with Run Run Shaw, who worked with Golden Harvest Studios with Bruce Lee. And then he came back to this country and made movies. And he came back over here, and he was a grip, and he was a light man, and he was a nobody. And finally, he sold his ideas to some American film companies and lost himself. Tremendous discipline since he was 16 years old. Yeah, he's a little arrogant, I guess, when he got older, but still, I respect this man. He's for real. And then his expose in his film, you know, God, that was the Under Siege 2 was Harp. You know, they're riding on a train and the beam in space is blowing away one guy. That's what Harp does. Harp can take one individual out anywhere in this world. It's in the Clementine satellites that we put up monitor the weapon system. Steven Seagal. Yeah. It's an amazing. There's expose of that Canadian or that Alaska movie about the oil spills and pollutants and toxins. He did some amazing work, you know.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
I'll let somebody else get on the line. I could talk to you all night, well, all day. It's only about 4:30 in the afternoon here, so I could.
Oh yeah, Christmas time coming here too. Have a nice warm Christmas down there. Probably 90 degrees in Brisbane, right? On Christmas Day.
Oh, yeah, probably even closer to 100 degrees Fahrenheit, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah, Santa Claus goes there, you know, I guess he has an airborne surfboard or something, you know, or a sailplane.
Almost has a heart attack, he has to wear a receptor or something.
Yeah, get the receptor on. You got your receptor on tonight?
I'm getting it on Tuesday, in a couple of days'
good.
Time.
Yeah, that's shun me, because you don't have it yet.
Oh, it's coming.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
now,
I already got the book,
down
so.
There.
Sorry?
You're going to have fun with it because it's going to change your DNA structure around a lot.
Yeah, is it going to make me be able to see auras easier? And
aura seeing is like this. That's a visual thing. You need to clear your synapses. I don't know what kind of habits you've had in the past that weren't good. I recommend drinking a lot of carrot juice, eating no alcohol or very little, no meat. You got to get your synapses clear. You got to go through a detox, unless you've already been doing all that. And what happens is then the receptor, the first 90 days that you wear a receptor, it strictly cleans the blood. It teaches the blood how to manufacture itself, a new red blood cell with the perfect integrity of an eight-sided octahedron. Because anybody that hasn't worn a receptor has distortions in their blood. And their pH levels are usually a little bit askew. So it's going to balance your pH, teach your blood how to flow. Then what happens is after 90 days when your blood is behaving properly, then the next series of organs that are going to be affected are the kidney and liver and spleen. Spleen being the organ in the body that transfers consciousness with oxygen. You know, the stupidest things they can do when they remove the spleen is they take away the ability of oxygen to transport consciousness, which is really stupid because medical people don't know about that. So all that starts working. Then what happens is your synapses fire faster, and then you can perceive, we were talking about the vibration of light being, when I was in my time machine, I went forward in the future only a few milliseconds, and I saw that light was a bunch of particles, like a bunch of spots, and I saw a headlight of a car going by the machine, and their headlights were sprinkling. The left headlight was hitting the ground ahead of it, the right headlight hadn't even gotten there yet, in that moment of pulse, because what I had to do is I'd slice right through the thing that holds us all together, that makes us all think that time is something that's, you know, finite. I sliced right through that and I went right outside of it, right to the edge of the illusion. And so what happens is, when you wear the receptor, you're going to slice through that gradually. At some point, when you slice through it gradually, you're going to become aware of the source of light, and that's when you start seeing auras. And you also, energy follows thought, so you got to think about what it's like to see an aura, and then you'll start seeing them. You just have to go, but you got to lighten up a lot. At least I did. I'm talking about me, you know. When I say you, I mean me, because that's, you know, I never know what you're all about. But and you get lighter, and you have to get light. And when you get light, you see light, and then it gets to be interesting. usually green. With most people, including myself, the first color that becomes predominant is green. You'll see a lot of green. You'll see more of it at sunset. You'll see a lot of green everywhere. Sometimes on a bright day, it'll have a green tint to it. And then later on, blue starts to come. And what that's telling you is green is the opening up of your thyroid, because green is the color of the thyroid. And then when blue comes, that's the heart. A lot of people have to find their heart before they can see auras. But usually when your thyroid and your heart work together, then your eyes will start, your synapses fire. And then when that happens, you're going to probably see nature spirits, and you'll probably observe, you know, more hummingbirds, and a lot of nature will start appearing because your aura has to shift to see it. And when your aura shifts to see the other, the more of the light, you're going to attract higher frequencies and higher things to your body anyway. They're going to come at you like a magnet. This is all good.
I have a question.
Bees will come at you too, but they won't hurt you. You'll have more bees around you. You'll find the bees are... And I built it someday. You probably read about my Firestar orb and how bees work. Have you gotten that far yet? And how the bee kingdom is affected and how that works with the...
No, I just remember you talking about
there's
it.
There's a whole lot I have written on that, you know, on the bee kingdom. Because a lot of angels, their pituitaries are extended into this... You know, angels are oftentimes second etheric beings, and when they extend their pituitary, it comes out as a queen bee, or, you know, the head ant or something in a hive. And they're on the other side, but that particular role model for the hive or the colony is actually an extension of a guiding angel. So that stuff goes into my book further on down there, how that all works. You'll find it in the chat section on the Firestar.
Dr. Bell?
Yeah.
Why, you know, I'm glad he asked that question, because when I do my meditating, all I ever see is violets violets, purple.
Butterflies. You are a butterfly. Congratulations, you just graduated from butterfly school. You know that? Let me tell you about that.
Yeah.
Okay,
what do you mean?
Here. Animals that are aggressive, insects that are aggressive, see in infrared. You ever seen songs about butterflies? They see in the ultraviolet, okay? The ultraviolet is the doorway to the astral plane, okay? When you see violet, a butterfly is a higher creature than some of them. You know, for example, weapon systems, they look through glasses that are infrared. Infrared is a higher angry frequency. It's red. It's the anger frequency. Ultraviolet is calm and collected. So you're getting into a calm state, and the doorway to seeing angelic beings is through the way of the butterfly. In metaphysics, you learn that stuff. So the butterfly sees ultraviolet. When you start to see ultraviolet, you're on your way through the door. Okay? That's a good thing.
Well, thank you. I never knew that because I see it. That's one of the predominant colors I see everywhere, even in a black room. Everything just turns purple, like I'm looking through purple sunglasses.
Yeah. Well, what I was explaining to him was the thyroid gland, emerald. An emerald receptor is a good one to start with. A lot of people are locked up in their throats. They don't know how to breathe. You know, you breathe through your solar plexus. They don't know how to do that. And they're stuck in their heads, so their thinking they become obsessive compulsive because they think they can't shut it off, so they have to do alcohol or drugs to shut it down. When they do that, then they get cravings in their stomach, so now they eat like a pig. And so they get this runaway, what's called a hypothalamus out of control syndrome. In the medical field, of course, represents the hypothalamus. Is the stomach in your brain. The thyroid is the doorway. And I'm not saying this person that was just on the phone is that, but that's a lot of people going in that. They have to fix the thyroid first. Most people that are not physically obese, overweight, if they're way overweight, then we've got to, you know, do something else. But they'll start out either with an emerald or a ruby. And that balances this hypothalamus. So what happens is green is the central spiritual atom of the hydrogen atom. Green is the shift, okay? Hydrogen atom shifts on green. When you look at how the spectrum works, you know, in the morning when you get up, you know, people, this is where you get into the color of chakras. People try to tell me what color chakras are, and it's pure nonsense. People don't, the body is not static, it's dynamic, it changes. And it polarizes, the body polarizes if it's aligned. In the morning, it's red, the hydrogen atom. At the closest atom, you know, the electron is the closest to the nucleus in the morning. It's the will. It's red. At noon, the hydrogen atom is polarized on green. Green is the closest to the nucleus. And at sunset, violet is the closest to the nucleus. Okay? That's why in the morning you think of one set of way of thinking, and at night, at midnight, you're thinking completely different than you did when you got out of bed. And that's because the shift of the hydrogen atom through green. And strangely enough, the color of nature is green. Era is a green sky over it in Pleiades versus, you know, blue one that we've got. So everything shifts on green. So how fast it shifts and how easy it shifts. And so if I get on a plane right here in California and I fly up to Europe, I got jet lag. And what jet lag really is, what it really is that my body is at a certain time is used to seeing a certain feedback from the electron being red at a certain point in the day. And right now it ain't red. I mean, it's red, but the day is not sunrise. It's sunset or mid-afternoon. And that polarization habit of my body is destabilized. Therefore, I'm cut off from the astral plane, and so therefore I have what they call jet lag. And so what happens is it takes time for your body to adjust this frequency of the hydrogen atom. So when people try to say this chakra has this color and this chakra has this, that's BS. All the colors are in all the chakras, and the body has habits depending on its environment. Now, if you're a night person, like you're becoming, like I am, we're operating a lot more with the violet right now than we do the red. We're sound asleep when the sun comes up because we're getting up around 10 or 11 in the morning. So that means our polarizing potential of a hydrogen atom is shifted. That means our chakras have shifted too. And so you got to take that into consideration. And what happens is when you try to fight that, when you start to fight that, that's when you have what we call a will to live disease, and that's one of the symptoms of getting cancer. So you know. So that gives you a little idea. Does that help you a little bit?
Yeah.
Always think of the body as a dynamic instrument, and you just got to keep it tuned. And that's what Len Horowitz was talking about in the very beginning, the divine instrument of the human body, and what a beautiful music machine it is. He talks a lot about that. He's got a very soothing way of explaining the orchestration of the human body. And jet lag, of course, you know, the conductor fell off the podium. Yeah, you're doing good with violet. Does that help you?
It does. Thank you very much.
Oh, good. Any other questions?
Dr. Fred, Scott's still here. I'm just, I do have, I've got a bit of a thyroid problem, I think, because I had so much, I had 10 mercury amalgam fillings in my head.
Yeah.
And what else? So about 2 years ago, I had them all pulled out, and I've been getting all this blood chemistry done, and, I'm still... Still,
how's your PSA count?
Problems. Sorry?
How's your PSA count?
PSA? Oh, I'd have to go grab it, I think.
Well, is it real low?
What's that stand for?
Prostate.
Prostate? I don't know if they did that.
Yeah, well, get that done. Then email me what it is. That tells me a lot about you, because that's a male test on the body. I'd like to know what your PSA count is.
I've got my results right in front of me.
Yeah. You may not have had that test run, prostate. What's your cholesterol look like?
Cholesterol, it's been coming 5.5 millimoles per liter, which is apparently within the optimum.
Yeah, that's good.
It's been coming up a little bit, which is good.
If it was high, well, to start, how old are you anyway?
31.
Yeah, 31. You're a little young yet. When you're about 37, 38, start taking HGH, human growth hormone. You're too early for it now. You don't need it yet. And that'll keep your cholesterol down really low forever. You get the spray like we have, as long as they don't make it illegal. It works really great.
Yeah, cholesterol, the cholesterol myths. Cholesterol is a band-aid, isn't it? And also a precursor to all the hormones, so, and your brain. So.
Well, yeah, you don't want a high antigen count in your body, because that creates pathogens, disease. At the same time, you want to keep your body fairly clear so you can assimilate protein and produce the hormone structure that's proper.
Yep. Yeah, I did go vegetarian 5 years ago. And,
oh, that's good.
I went back.
Oh, you
it
fell
didn't,
off?
Didn't work for me. I think it was the straw that broke the camel's back, and it led to 5 years of chronic back pain.
Yeah, well, if you had chronic back pain, then you had some infections, and you probably had some microbacterial poison.
Yeah.
What happens is when you gross your body up with meat again, you're covering up a problem that you're going to have to deal with later on. That's what that is. Pain, those lower back pains are always an indication of an infection in the body somewhere. Not to be feared, but just deal with it gradually.
I was thinking
Kundalini. Receptor will help you a lot, you know. And you the silver power dome would help you too, because the brain, as you know, our arteries coming out of the lungs are very small at the base of the brain. So
yep.
Over a period of a lifetime, the base of the brain fills up with toxins. It's like a big filter. It goes from the arterial size is coming up from your lungs to your brain is a quarter of an inch in the trachea. But as soon as it gets to the base of the brain, the circle of Willis, it goes to a millionth of an inch. Well, that's a filter. So if you have smoking going on, well, then your brain's going to fill up with nicotine. If you pollutants in the air, you know, all that, anything goes in your lungs stays in your brain. So what happens is that slowly moves forward in the body, and you get in the mid-30s, it's up in the midbrain. The midbrain is responsible for digestive and allergies and all of that. Digestion and the endocrine control system comes from the midbrain. So what happens is when the infection gets there, the blockage gets there, you start having a shutdown of the endocrine system, and that's when allergies start to show up. If you don't do something about it, it progresses and you end up being senile with Parkinson's and Alzheimer's or some other stupid thing, or you just get old and your pituitary shuts down and your serotonin levels go nuclear and you die. It's a death hormone. Serotonin is a death hormone. So when you put the pyramid on your head, the power dome, the silver power dome, it will detox your brain really fast. You may get headaches from it because all that shit comes out of your brain and goes into your liver. And you got to start taking some vitamin C and some vitamin A and get that liver cleaned up. But to show you how powerful, and I want to post this on blog, how powerful the pyramid is on your head. We had them in a school system at Orchid Union School back when Reagan was president. That's his backyard. It was up there in Montecito. And we put them in a school system, and we had a kid. His name was Sam Alms. And his teacher was Sky Lewis, and this kid had grand mal seizures from the day he was born. They put him on lithium, and he started wearing our pyramids on his head, and after 30 days, the grand mal seizures stopped, and epilepsy was gone. He still had to take his lithium, but the pyramid activated the lithium, and he no longer has grand mal seizures. We have an official medical testimonial to that, and others, and we got to put those down. We got to put those up on. I haven't gotten the time to post all that really heavy medical stuff that we did. Put that up on the website. So that's an extreme case. Now, you're not getting grand mal seizures or anything like that, but you are getting pain. And pain is a spasm, and it is related. So, yeah, a silver power dome is something else. I don't know if you ordered one, but you need to get one.
I think I'm getting the ray dome.
Yeah, the ray dome is not strong. Well, he used a ray dome, but for you, probably at some point get a power dome. Much more powerful than a ray dome. No?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's different metals. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, there's different metals that are on these pyramids, and what these different metals do is they modulate different chakras in your body, different endocrine centers. And realize that a chakra is nothing more than a part of what's called the parasympathetic nervous network that works on contractions or relaxing or contracting. And this puts a pulsation on the endocrine gland, which then releases hormones into the bloodstream. And there are no pipes, per se, and valves going from the endocrine system into the bloodstream. There's nothing more there than a capillary wall. So the wall either gets tense or relaxes. And if it's not working right, it's going to cause spasms and pain. So the pyramid brings all that into balance, and that's controlled by different metals that we use on the pyramid surface. The stuff that Wilhelm Reich got
into. I've heard pH at the cell wall. If the pH on the outside is and the inside of the cell is not correct, then that can lead to pain too.
Yeah. Well, it was really funny. I remember very well, we were in New York back in about 1980, and we were having the National Health Federation was in the basement of the Roosevelt Hotel, and up at the top, Ava Reich was giving a medical seminar to a bunch of people. And I never met Ava Reich before. It's Wilhelm Reich's daughter. She's a medical doctor, and one of my salespeople walked into her medical seminar wearing a pyramid on her head, and the ray dome or the power dome. It's silver, but it's also got a rainbow surface where we heat treat it, and so it has a bunch of rainbow colors. And when he walked into that convention, she stopped the convention, pointed at the pyramid this kid was wearing, and immediately identified it as something that her father had also, oh, there's one of those orgone-plated pyramids that my dad used to make. And it was one of mine, obviously, and that's how I met her. And then she sent out somebody to go find who the hell put this together, and that's how I met Ava Reich. It was real interesting. So Wilhelm Reich was making these kind of pyramids way back when, but he just didn't sell any of them like we do, you know. So I wasn't the first to do that. And it was a chiropractor that put them on people's heads. It wasn't me. A chiropractor asked me to develop a unidirectional pyramid that would amplify the energies of the human aura. And that's how I developed it. And he's the one that put it on the heads. I didn't do it. That's another story for another time. I'll post that on one of my radio shows. I think I already posted that story, actually. It's in the archives. Yeah, so I don't have to repeat myself. Yeah, there we go. Anything else?
I should let someone else get on.
Is there anybody else that wants to get on, Don?
You know, our listenership has stayed very high.
About 3 hours now.
Yeah, what do you think?
I don't know. I think that we should take a break. I think they got enough. If they don't call in the next 3 seconds.
Well, we can always do a...
do another show.
Sure. I mean, we can do a live special every week if you want.
I won't have the time for it, but I will do them from time to time.
One a month or something?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
I'll keep doing my weekly show. I don't mind doing this weekend thing. I like the feedback. I'll see what kind of hate mails I get from it. And then if I'm not threatened too much, I'll come back and do another one. I just do it one step at a time. Like I said before, I do these live shows once I knew we had an audience out there, and 13 people's enough to do it now, you know. But those 13 are getting sneaky, and they're making me think they're 26.
They're starting to clone themselves, aren't they?
Well, you know, they have two cell phones and, you know, going out and getting double email addresses and little games they're playing with me now. I got to watch them, you know, but that's okay. I have a cagey audience. They're crazy, you know. They like to mess with me. But at least they're not giving me any negative feedback. You know, I'm only getting positive ones.
Okay, Don and Dr. Fred, it's been an honor.
Oh, yeah, it's good having you on.
It was a pleasure. Thanks.
Love both of you guys. Okay, and love to everyone else that's out there. Okay, thanks a lot. See you. Bye.
All right, Don, I guess we'll wind it down, baby.
Okay. Now I'll let you wind her down. And Dr. Bell, again, it's such an honor. Not only an honor to have you a part of BBS, but to be working with you as closely as I do, because I just love you. And I love what you do. I love who you are, and I love everything about you. And thank you.
Is that a proposal?
Yeah.
Oh boy, Donnie. I wish I could say the same about you.
Uh-oh, I think that is another caller. If you want to take it.
Yeah, I'll do one more here.
All right.
Yeah. I guess we have a caller out there. I'm not sure. Is there a caller in there?
Jeremy, you're on the air.
Hi, Fred.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, I was wondering what your take is on essential oils and its efficacy and how to use them.
Well, there are people out there that know a lot more about essential oils, but internally.
Not internal. Internally.
I've never eaten them. Internally, oil balances the electron cell structure. And when the viscosity of that oil gets polluted, it causes a problem. Externally, the skin is the largest organ in the body.
Yep.
And the essential oils are tuned, you know, the body, the physical body is like an antenna to the astral body. And I know that the essential oils work very well with the Bach flower remedy in concert. And there's a reason why perfumes are around, for example. They create an emotional astral presence.
Right.
And so what happens when you use the essential oils, you can really do a lot of healing on the astral body, or you can do a lot of healing on things that are karmically wrong with you that could create a physical problem, and you can fix them before it ever gets internal. So from that standpoint is my understanding of essential oils. As far as going into the intimacy of each oil and what it does, I've had a little bit of experience, but I wouldn't probably be impressing you very much.
So do you recommend burning them or bathing in them or rubbing?
I can actually answer that one.
Yeah,
really?
Sure. You know, I've got, I recommend the Kama Sutra oils.
Uh-huh.
They're great. Have you ever tried them?
No.
They're delicious.
I've only used myrrh and frankincense.
Those are good ones. Those were Mary Magdalene's favorites.
Pardon me?
Those were the favorites of Mary Magdalene.
Yeah,
Jesus' feet, if you remember correctly.
Yeah, it's anointing.
Yeah, and
incredible.
Exactly. There you go. So that's how I understand.
I had a whole the first time I used myrrh, I had a whole council of disembodied people harassing me in my dreams. Yeah.
Yeah. I use I like frankincense and myrrh incense. You know,
okay, but tell me about the Kama Sutra oil.
Go ahead, Don, you're on.
Uh-oh, I shouldn't have got into that mess.
What's the how does that work?
I actually have you ever seen those internet ads that try to sell you Kama Sutra oil for you and your girlfriend?
Oh, maybe years ago.
Well, that's what I bought. Okay, I'm guilty.
Oh, is that where you're coming from?
Shoot me.
Okay, sorry. Hey, Violet Pranayama is, you know, if you're there in a meditation and you fill your space with that color, that's a good opportunity to clear out the karma.
Oh, I agree.
And to attract or to visualize cliches
that you want.
I tell you
how we are with Violet around here.
Pardon me?
We used to, they're very expensive. There's a laser, it's called a HECAD, helium cadmium laser.
No, I was speaking of I believe a topic earlier was the color violet appearing when one closes his eyes or meditates. Or
no, those actually appear to me like, if I'm lying down meditating, I'll open my eyes and the whole room will be like I put a violet sunglass on, and then at the whole room will move in violet energy waves. And then at the very ceiling, I can see a green strip that's on top of the violet, and then the ceiling itself will be blue. So you have a blue ceiling, then you have maybe like a 8-inch green energy wave just floating underneath, and then the rest of the room will be totally and absolutely violet, like energy. If you would look at jet fuel, and you see jet fuel at an airport, imagine that in your room, but moving in waves of violet. That happens to me almost every night. And then I see the energy outlines of beings, and quite a significant number of them, and it's quite common.
Beautiful. Use that as an opportunity to dissipate all the activities that you do during the day that would have a consequence for good or bad, doesn't matter, just get rid of it because you are identified with those activities, and visualize exactly what it is you want to manifest. You're there, you know, that's the energy that is intent, and you know, just below, like, verbalization. Yeah.
Well, thank you.
That's good stuff. Good, very good. And then finish it with white. Try to flush it with white right before you leave that meditation. And then dissipate it. Just say, thanks, I don't need it anymore. Another good show, guys. Thanks.
Well, thank you. Is Dr. Bell still there?
I'm still here. Well, wind it down. What I wanted to say is that the helium cadmium laser that we use, they're hard to get, and blue is the most expensive color to get right now. When we use the HECAD laser with the meditation, with some of these incenses that focus in that area, you have a transcendental built-in experience. We shoot it into a big crystal, like a big quartz crystal. Amazing, some of that. That's the favorite color laser of all of them, because the laser, what it does, we'll do a show on lasers one of these days. I'll do one on the night show, on the Tuesday night show.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter. That's just a suggestion. It has to come from you, from your spine or wherever it's generated, one of the chakras, most likely the crown.
Well, anyway, we'll do a show on the lasers and the effects
All right,
guys. Incense is pretty interesting.
Yeah, yeah, incense are wonderful. They travel between the worlds, as does all smells. Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Don, I think that's about it. I think it's
yeah.
Callers, right?
I'm sure there'd be a lot more callers. We've got a lot of people on, but I figure you might be wanting to wind it down.
Yeah, I gotta take a break. I think we're done with doing shows.
Okay. Okay. Well, we've had a pretty large audience from Canada, Australia, the U.S., all over the place, and I just really like to thank the audience for tuning in and listening to the special live broadcast by Dr. Bell. And folks, listen to me. Dr. Bell's, he's going to be hard to convince to keep doing this, so you're going to have to email him, send him your notes. Remember, no negative comments.
I don't do those very well.
And encourage him to keep doing live shows, because he's a wealth of information. And for that person who's calling in, again, we're not taking any more calls. I know the lines are full, but he'll be back again, and we thank you for your participation. Dr. Bell, it's all yours.
That's great, and I'm going to hang up and just email me at fredbell@pyradyne.com. That's fredbell@pyradyne.com. Visit our store, call our, we have 800 numbers, 1-800-729-2603. That's 1-800-729-2603. Our offshore phone number is 1-714-499-2603. I have two great light workers, Mitch and Mikkel, will answer a lot of your questions there if I'm not around. And occasionally I'll pick the phone up too. And until the next time, have a great evening. I hope we got some ideas across everybody and answered a few questions. That's what we're here for. Until again, later. Bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogginservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.